This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Big Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca on what will be a lovely Thursday in the city of Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada, across the province. High around 26, 27 degrees, sunny, no chance of precipitation. Not the case tomorrow and for the weekend. So we'll keep you up to date on that. Jim Tilth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki with you, as always, here on the Big Show, or normally. CFL Week 5 started. The British Open's underway. Blue Bombers, one final. Well, today's travel day. Go to BC. Blue Jays have a nooner in Boston after another loss last night. We'll delve into them and, of course, talk some hockey and some Jets. David Pagnotta, the fourth period. Ed Tate of the BlueBombers.com and Laura Armstrong from the Toronto Star on the Toronto Blue Jays. And O.J. Simpson could be paroled today. His ninth year of his 30-year sentence, he's eligible for parole. We'll discuss that as well. We'll start with the British Open and let everybody know that Jordan Spieth has taken over the lead through nine holes at 3-under. Stuart Manley, Ian Poulter, Justin Rose are all 2-under. Manley's through 18, as you just heard with from Brandon Rewicki on SportsCenter. Poulter is on the 15th hole and Rose on the 18th hole. Gentlemen, how are we today?
3-under this early. It's like, settle down, dude. You don't want to run away with this thing and take all the drama away, Mr. Spieth. Things going pretty well. Had a nice night last night. You guys ever been to Sky Zone Trampoline Park? No. Wicks, you're a jumper. You would really dig it. It is really cool.
Are you a jumper?
Oh, he's
I got a little hops.
He's a jumper.
I continue to learn about my co-host.
It's really cool, man. It's in the south end of the city, and it's an absolute heaven, a place of heaven for kids and anyone with energy. It is a super cool place, man. The kids took the kids out there yesterday, had a bunch of fun, and then watched a football game where thankfully the right team came out on top of it. But again, just an absolute abysmal job with the officiating and some of the review process. Like the CFL, I always feel for the officials in any sport. It's the toughest thing in the world. I have always immense respect, always will, for the men and women who wear the stripes. But boy, oh boy, as each week goes by, as each game goes by, it gets harder and harder to defend what's going on in the CFL right now with its officiating, man.
So let's start there again. How do we fix it?
I really don't know. I don't think you can fix it on the fly, but it's just some of the things that you see, it just doesn't make sense. Like, how do you blow that play dead? What transpired here with Durant and the throw, like the sack throw, sort of the whole tuck rule sort of thing, in a sense, here with Montreal last night, and the PI on the. Which the interception for Ottawa, like, it's just, things that seem so obvious, I don't understand. I'm approaching a point where I don't really understand what the officials are looking at that's causing them to make the plays that they are. So it's certainly one of the things, Ambrosi came out and, you know, stated a few of the things that were important on his plate upcoming. And still all that blather about expansion continues, which makes me tired in a hurry. But certainly the officiating, the process involved with the review, all that stuff has got to be in the top three things that he's got to solidify in a huge way very quickly.
This is the start of this season kind of reminds me of the replacement refs in the NFL a few years ago, where it's Mickey Mouse right now. And you're seeing it just about every game, some kind of, or, you know, multiple, not even just one instance. That's the most troubling thing, is it's multiple, just straight up blown calls, not even anywhere near what everybody else is seeing out there. And it's embarrassing, and it makes the game really, really tough to watch. And the CFL for years now has said this isn't really a big of a problem as I think a lot of fans are making it out to be. Yet, all of the fans and all the people watching the game continue to harp on it, and it feels like they're not really that interested in trying to fix it, which is maybe the biggest issue. And Troy's right. This isn't something, you know, similar to changing your review system, perhaps, where you can do this implemented in week six. Okay, away we go here. Everything's going to be fixed. You might need a complete overhaul of how you teach these guys, and it might take a year or two. Because what's happening right now on the field clearly isn't working, because it's terrible. There's no middle ground on this. The refereeing in the CFL is god-awful, and it's hurting the product on the field.
And again, I think most people are in agreement with that. I just don't know how you fix it. Like, I don't know. We discussed this last week after the Bomber game, the money it's going to cost. Like, the mistakes you're mentioning to me is just experience. Like, it's that in the heat of the moment. Like, have you guys ever officiated anything? Like, I used to ref soccer. Mm-hmm. And having played the game my whole life and in college and then going on to senior men's. And senior men's a couple of years, I don't know, I was 26, 28, I don't know, and started reffing that. And that is a different perspective of any game. And it's just a different animal to sort of take in. And I don't know, is it just experience? Like, for some of the call, like you say, why you blow the whistle dead there? Like, that's a straightforward, easy call. So why do you? Yeah, is it the heat of the moment? Is it lack of experience? Is it...
Well, it can't be lack of experience. These guys aren't coming from rec sports going into officiating, JT.
Yeah,
these
guys are.
No, they're not. Well, they're refs coming into the CFL as well-honed and trained
football refs.
Well, they're still refs, though.
Well, yes,
these guys are.
That's rec.
And even you can't say, do you know what the resumes of the guys, the crew last night were specifically to make a statement along those lines? I think most of these guys have some pretty... I'm saying that you were playing rec going to officiating. You can't compare what the training the officials in the CFL do coming in to officiating the CFL at that speed and all the rest of it. I mean, he must have thought there's a throwing motion involved, right? That's why he would blow it dead. But nonetheless, even if there was a throwing motion involved and the ball's going backwards, like, that's all just the ramifications. I don't understand it. I don't know if it's just a real strange time where all these different instances are popping up to sort of magnify and present, make it look like there's a problem. But it just is, as we're saying, every week, darn near every single game, something fairly substantial. I'm thankful that Ottawa won the game last night, because they had a couple of opportunities to pull away that much more so, and were kind of held back by the officiating.
And this is week five in the CFL, right?
Yes, week five started last night.
So we've had three separate occasions where we've opened a show with CFL officiating. Mm. So 3 out of 5 weeks so far in the season. Bang up job. Like, I don't really care what the issues are. They have to fix it. And you know how you don't fix this problem? By not doing anything, like the CFL has done every single offseason over the past 5 or 6 years, where these issues become more and more glaring. And look, is it going to cost them some money? Yeah, probably. But like, what way do you want to go with this? Do you want to save a couple of bucks, or do you want X amount of viewers to turn off their TVs and, yeah, I'll go watch baseball. Yeah, I'll go outside and do something, because it is getting to the point where you're just frustrated watching. Like, a viewer, a fan of the game shouldn't be frustrated watching a game where two or three times a quarter you're left wondering to yourself, what could they possibly be looking at here, and why are they making these calls? It's way too much of a common occurrence. Everyone complains about refereeing in all the major sports, but it's a game by game thing in the CFL, where every game we can look at, you know, two or three plays and go, this is just inexcusable to miss calls like this.
Well, my point about coming out of amateur, I don't think they're playing and officiating, but, and this isn't a knock on everybody who is officiating football right now, but if you look at the National Football League, who has 350 Division I NCAA teams playing against each other with training going on, you have another second division of NCAA football in the third, then you have all the high school football that's going on in the States. CFL officials are coming out of doing one or two high school games a week and maybe a CIS, if there's one, if there's a CIS program in the city they're from or currently reside in. And so I would assume, and Boss Pete's fan line at 9 o'clock, feel free to correct me, but I would assume most of the officials coming out are coming from, what is there, 12 U Sport cities that have football right now? And they're playing four home games a year. So you're basically getting the majority of your experience out of high school football in Canada.
Yeah, but you're assuming that the crews, the head refs involved, have limited experience. You don't know what, like last night's crew,
well, from my experience covering the Bisons for 6 or 7 years, most of the officials there are doing 1 to 2 and maybe a Bison game a week. And those are the guys that are going up to the CFL. And I'm not harping on them for that. My point is there's not a lot of opportunity to gain a ton of hours of officiating football in Canada.
Well, they did implement that program last year
with the NFL.
With the NFL, where they kind of swapped places for a little bit. And I'm assuming a bunch of these guys, too, came from collegiate football in Canada with the CIS. Like, I don't think you just go from high school, you skip college, and go right up to the pros. But I don't really care, to be honest. Like, I'm sorry. I don't care. Fix it. Like, I know refereeing's tough.
Don't we have to care? Like, don't we have to figure out a way to help these guys get more experience, more training? And it, to me, it comes down to dollars that the Canadian Football League doesn't have. That's what it comes down to for me. Like, it's great that this partnership's going on with the NFL, and if these guys have the time to go down there, but these guys have to have jobs. And if you're basically doing 1 to 2 high school games and maybe a U Sport game a year as training to get into the CFL, it, like, I'm not harping on these guys' resumes.
Why do you think they only do 1 or 2 university games? I don't understand really what you're saying.
Because
here.
Well, those
most
are the guys.
CFL refs are established CFL refs, right? Like you would have some influx of rookie guys coming into the league, but those guys that are coming in from CIS, it's not like they're. Why are you saying they're reffing 1 or 2 games a year?
I'm trying to figure out how we train them better. So I'm trying to figure out where they come from, and I'm trying to figure out what their background is.
But they'd be refs in the CIS before they jump up to the CFL, right?
Yes. One game a week in their hometown and every second week. So that's 4 a year, Troy, is what I'm trying to establish. And from covering Bison sports for about 7 years, I know the head official. I talked to some of the officials, and they say that that's the experience they got. So I'm trying to figure out why it's not a better caliber at the CFL level, and I'm trying to just look at their resumes. I don't know all their resumes. I don't know all their names, but from what I've discovered, that's where they come from. That's their experience.
Well, the only thing is, if you're talking about a crew, if the guys last night are veteran CFL officials, everything you're saying does not apply to the mess we saw last night. And
Why does it not apply?
Well, if these guys have been in the CFL for 3-4 years, they should have an absolute grasp of their veteran officials at that point in time. And hey, just because, how is the system any less than what it was 10 or 20 years ago? Were officials struggling to the degree that they are over the last year or two in the CFL when the training, everything was the same in place? We're getting Canadian refs coming out of Canadian colleges and all the rest of it. So that this has been in place for decades here, and it's just the last few or couple of years that things really seem to be at a questionable point.
So it's the individuals that they have.
I don't know what the answer is for sure.
If they've been in the CFL for 5 or 6 years and they have the resumes, then it's purely there's a talent level for many of them, not just on the average or 1 or 2, for many of them that they're not very good.
What? Yeah, and I don't know if it's many. Like, I don't even know how many CFL, you know, you can't go look anywhere to see the crews or how many there are. I don't know how many different CFL crews there are in the CFL for officiating. But it's... Maybe we've had like a guy like Glenn Johnson on in the past. Maybe we should have him on in the next few days sort of thing and try and pick his brain to see what he's thinking about. Does the CFL think they have a problem? I guess that's right. It's always, that's number one, isn't it? Admitting you have a problem. If the CFL doesn't think they have a problem, then maybe the problem's that much larger than we think.
Well, I would love to have Glenn Johnson on and discuss that. And he's a proud Winnipegger. I'm just trying to get to the root of the problem of why the caliber of it is, and it goes beyond the field as well. It goes to what's going on with the reviews and everything else, in my point. For whatever reason, it's very dysfunctional.
Well, the reviews, The only thing I credit I'll give them with the reviews is you look at the NHL struggles with reviews. You know, I don't know. Is the NFL or like the NHL struggles? The NFL isn't the smoothest thing in the world with reviews. So I don't, like the review thing, the putting that into process at this point in time, I think in sports is still a little bit muddy for a bunch of the leagues involved. So I can cut them a little bit of slack there, but there's no question whatsoever for the integrity of the game, the connection with the fans, people get fired, people lose their jobs because of wins and losses, and the impact of the officiating on the games at this point in time, it's something detrimental to the game in an overall sense, and that's just not right.
We got to take a break. We'll come back with more of The Big Show here on TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 and Robertson College present the return of the 10K Summer Selfie. We have $10,000 in cash prizes to award select selfie takers across Manitoba, and you could be one of the recipients. To enter, take a really good selfie at some point during the summer and post it before Thursday, August 31st to Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram using the hashtag 10K Summer Selfie. Show us an amazing photo or take a themed selfie. In one of five bonus categories, your picture could be worth $1,000. $1,000 prizes for Best Animal Selfie presented by Assiniboia Park Zoo. Best Food and Drink Selfie presented by Booster Juice. Best Hair Selfie presented by Aura Hair Group. Best Outdoor Selfie presented by Lacoste Garden Center. Best Smile Selfie presented by Toddlers to Teens. And Selfie of the Summer presented by Robertson College could net you $5,000. More information, visit TSN1290.ca. Jim, Troy, and Brandon, and the Open is well underway. Jordan Spieth continues to lead through 10 holes. He's 3 under. Welshman Stuart Manley shot a 68 today, 2 under, and he is tied right now with Ian Poulter, who's on 16, Justin Rose on 9, and Matthew Fitzpatrick and a bunch of others. Brandon Grace or Matt and Fitzpatrick are on 17 at 1 under. We'll keep you up to date throughout the program today. Who do we have again? Gentlemen in the Open?
Well, we're going one or two guys each.
Let's go three.
Okay. Well, I'm going with Sergio Garcia to grab a second major after that gorilla fell off his back at Augusta. And going with John Rahm as well, his compatriot, so a couple of Spanish cats, and I'm going to have to give some thought as to the third.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was wrestling all week whether I should go with Rose and Matsuyama, so I guess those are my two dogs there. And I picked Matsuyama to eventually come out with the win. A third cat. I could look at the scoreboard and
give a third one.
I look at the scoreboard and take Ian. I kind of like Ian Poulter going into it just because he had a good showing at Royal Birkdale in 08 when he lost by one or two strokes to Padraig Harrington. But I'll go with Hadwin. I'll go with Adam Hadwin.
I'll go with Cousin Lee. Just because I have to.
Just want to get your heart broken again.
Lee Westwood, just like I have to go see Deadpool 2, unfortunately. I am going with, I had Matsuyama yesterday. I also like Rose Garcia, all those guys. I'm in a pool where you pick three top 10, three bottom, so I maybe threw too many names up there. But I had Jordan Spieth winning this year, and Matsuyama is my two. If I had a third, I'd throw Justin Rose in there. So we'll see as we go forward. Back to the CFL talk about yesterday. Week 5 did kick off. Ottawa beat Montreal 24-19. We talked about the officiating. We'll open the Boss Pizza fan line if anybody wants to help educate us, too, on the training and everything that goes on with that. And if you have a resolution for it, we had an official from a different sport call in last week as well and sort of give some insight there. That was great. We'll do that at 9 o'clock and other things on the Boss Pizza fan line. But last night, Week 5 kicked off, and Ottawa got their first win of the year over Montreal, 24-19. Trevor Harris, the quarterback, after the game, saying it's just one win.
It's something that he's getting used to. Look, there was a...
Oh. What did you think of the game, and what did you think of the performance by Trevor Harris?
I thought the game was pretty good, a little bit sleepy early on, and then it woke up for some pretty good back and forth a little bit later. Certainly, in the third quarter. And just it's always fun watching Nick Lewis too, right? And of course he gets the number of receptions and all the rest of it, but just how he is able, anyone that thinks you need to be fast to be a successful receiver, and certainly in the NFL, like in the higher up you get, the more important it becomes. But there are also guys in both leagues, NFL, CFL, in the history that just know how to find the space or to run the route to give them enough of a window for quarterbacks to feed it in. And watching Nick Lewis go about doing his business is a fun thing to do. Darian Durant, early on in the game, it seemed more or less trying to give away. The Owls are trying to give away the game and surged a little bit later on here. But you know, it was a decent game to watch. And I think that you look at the East now, guys, and it's something, isn't it? When you're talking about what record might eventually win the East, and you know, is the team that captures the East, are they actually going to end up over 500? That's a heck of a. And right now, Toronto's sitting on top at 2-2. You got Montreal in second at 2-3. They need to win a game to get to 500, and then it just gets uglier underneath that. And how about the scheduling for Ottawa to upcoming here right away to play again on Monday? Just a god awful schedule here for Ottawa. That's for the big boys, and like all the guys are getting smacked around and bruised up. You know, today they're in worse shape than they were last night, and you just I don't really understand this scheduling whatsoever here.
No, well, and it's just unfair is really weird. What it is. Yeah. And I mean, I've never heard of it, you know, kind of following CFL Fantasy yesterday when some of the panel was saying, oh, well, we got to go with Red Blacks because they're playing twice in the same week. How that is a possibility is just it's beyond me. But I think Ottawa is clearly the cream of the crop when it comes to the East. And I think they will get above 500 because, you know, out of the first four games, how many of those should have been Ottawa wins? And, you know, maybe at least two of them. Just kind of some bad luck and unfortunate timing for them there.
You can really say a team that's 1-3-1 is clearly the cream of the East, huh?
Well, yes. That's what I was going to ask you guys. Is Ottawa the best team in the East right now?
And that's not necessarily a positive for Ottawa. It's more of a this is what we have to deal with the East Division again this year. But I mean, Trevor Harris is maybe it's just because Trevor Harris is. You know, I know Ricky Ray's playing well, but we see him, you know, that injury bug raise its head time and time again with him. I just think Trevor Harris is playing the best head quarterback so far in the division. So that kind of gives me, I think that's enough to tip the scales for me.
Yeah, and I can't commit to that same degree with Ricky Ray playing at the level that he is, and also the surging, surprising defense in Toronto, and most certainly the defense they got in Montreal. And I think Darian Durant is capable of much better than what we've seen early on. I think the standings are fairly representative of just how sort of muddy and ugly things are in the East. I don't see a clear-cut favorite there.
We'll talk more CFL and Bombers when we come back on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Ian Poulter has drawn into the lead with Jordan Spieth at 3-under. Poulter's on 17. Spieth and Poulter, 3-under. Stuart Manley finished 2-under. Alex Noren is 2-under on 17. That's your leaderboard at the British Open right now on The Big Show. 34 minutes past the opening hour, and TSN 1290 and Robertson College present Manitobaville. We're awarding $25,000 to put towards a project that enhances one special Manitoba community. All entries are in. Our panel of judges will now narrow down the selection to our top 10. You'll be able to watch the top 10 project/community videos as of Monday, July 24th at tsn1290.ca, where you'll be able to vote for your favorite as well. Whomever gets the most votes as of Friday, August 4th at noon, will receive the $25,000 grand prize. It's Manitobaville, making one hometown even prouder, presented by Robertson College and proudly supported by Chicken Chef, Merrick Contractors, the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, and Star Ready to Move Homes. And, of course, for more information and to check them out, tsn1290.ca. Jim, Troy, and Brandon on The Big Show. We're going to hear from Bombers head coach Mike O'Shea and Matt Nichols in this segment as they continue preparations today. They'll leave for BC and take on the Lions tomorrow night. Manuk Denture Blue Bomber game day starts at 7 o'clock on TSN 1290 tomorrow night, and kickoff for the game on TSN will go at 9 p.m. Let's finish that discussion, gentlemen. I was going to ask you that when Brandon brought it up in the last segment. Is Ottawa the best team in the East right now? We heard the debate between Milt and Matt, and we talked about it. Who's the best team in the CFL? Who's the best team in the East right now?
Well, before we went to break, I said, you know, a little bit on each team here, and I really don't know that it's a pretty tough thing to distinguish at this point in time. I like the defenses of Toronto and Montreal. I'm not so sure on the defense in Ottawa. They have given up 142 points in the five games that they've played. They are capable offensively, though. I really, truly think at this point in time, you just put Toronto, Montreal, Ottawa into a hat and pull something out. I do think, though, with the defense in Montreal and with the potential upside of Darian Durant as he gets more and more comfortable with the new offensive coordinator, the plays involved, things along those lines, that, and similar to what Milt was saying, where he looked at it and saw Montreal as maybe being the most dangerous team to come out and survive the East. I'm kind of there in a way where if Darian Durant can sort of get on track, and I think he's completely capable of it, with the defense that they've got in Montreal, and I'll buy that defense right now ahead of the Toronto defense going forward, just because I'm more familiar, and we've seen that D in Montreal enjoy a considerable amount of success over the last number of years. I'm going to lean towards going to Montreal in picking them before it's certainly clear. Thinking Darian Durant could play at a higher level and having faith in that defense. But to me, it's real muddled up right now with Toronto, Montreal, and Ottawa.
Yeah, let me turn my mic on. Ottawa's first four games were in three of those first four, Calgary, Edmonton. Mm-hmm. And they were in those games right until the final buzzer sounded. So they haven't had the easiest schedule to open things up, and they should have beat Toronto at home. They crapped that one down their leg. But I just think... I think when it comes down to it, I don't even know if they end up with the best record necessarily, but I'm a big Trevor Harris fan. He's every time he's gotten out on the field, he really hasn't shown anything other than being an elite quarterback in the CFL. And I wanted to touch on your other point earlier too. You enjoyed Nick Lewis, watching Nick Lewis. I hate watching him play. Dude. I hate it. Dude, lose some weight. Like he had that thing last year where he said, you know, some guys are unprofessional and this and are immature on the team. You're like 50 pounds overweight, dude. Like it was kind of funny 1 year, but now it's just I just don't enjoy it. Like it's not funny to me.
That's an interesting point, because we've gone through that with an athlete in this town as well, performing at an elite level. And I don't know if Nick Lewis is elite anymore, but he's still very good. Does it bother you? Like, does it bother anybody who hires him or pays him that, you know, you're not in peak physical condition?
Well, it's a knock. You have to, I'm right there with Wixon questioning, if you're not dedicated enough mentally to come into camp and to basically, you know, pro sports or high-level sports these days, way more so than, you know, going way back to the 70s and 80s when guys like the off, I remember seeing the training camp prep for the Toronto Maple Leafs for 1967, and it looks like it's such a joke, right? Like to do 50 sit-ups and to do 20 push-ups and things that are just ridiculous. And now it high-level sports, starting at a very young age, is basically 365, 24/7, right? You take a week off, two at the very most, but I think most high-level athletes take a week off at the most in their off-season from training, if you're not all that banged up. So should you question the dedication of a male or female athlete that comes in something less than ideal? Yeah, I'm right there with that. But I've kind of come to understand with Nick Lewis where, you know, he is still really productive. And Derek Taylor stats with how sticky his mitts are, how the guy just never drops a ball, is really quite remarkable. He came into the CFL thick and kind of chunky, right? And the one thing for sure in being around a bunch of different bodies, thousands of different bodies in that locker room, are some athletes are gifted with their bodies and others have to really work hard to keep any sort of shape and that sort of thing. right? Like, you just get some bad bodies involved. And I dare say Nick Lewis is probably, I don't know, you know, what his diet is or anything like that. I don't know how much he applies himself. But sometimes you just, like, there's only so much you could do with your body sometimes. And I kind of wonder in Nick Lewis's case, who's stocky, is that a, right? Is that a word you can use? Like, right, he's just kind of has that girth, and he had it kind of coming into the league, and now well into his 30s. I don't know. He still does the job. So it is an interesting debate to be had, that's for sure.
Depending on your definition, but I think he's more than stocky. I honestly do.
But I would have to agree.
And, you know, you brought up routines and workouts. When I was doing the Dale Hawerchuk Memorial Tournament, on the hot stove was Bob Bourne. And Bob Bourne's interesting because he was a guy that came out of the Saskatoon Blades, went to the New York Islanders in 74-75, played 77 games for them. And then he went back to the Islanders, played 14, got sent down. And he spent the entire year in the CHL with Fort Worth. And I asked him about that. And because a lot of the guys on the panel from the 70s that played in the early 80s were saying, you know, our routine was you golfed and played ball in the summer. And then you came to training camp, got in shape, and went.
Yeah.
Bob, when I asked him about it, I said, you had a unique career because you played a year. And back in those days, and then you got cut. And he said, it was actually a season and a half I was out of the NHL, and it was that offseason that I personally started taking work. Like, I worked out all summer because I wanted to get back to the NHL, and then he got back into the NHL, and of course, 76, 77, and then won cups with the Islanders and went on to a long career. But in that era, he said, I was the weird one. I was literally the guy that other guys are going, you want to go to the lake, you want to go fishing, you want to do this. And he's like, no, I started working out every day, and I couldn't find people to work out with, he said.
Mm-hmm. And back then, even, like, when you're talking the 80s, it was actually discouraged to weight train. Everyone thought it would throw off your technique and all those sorts of things. So how far along it's come. At this point in time, it would be tough to, unless you have some sort of a medical condition that we're all ignorant of, it is a little bit, you're just with the training facilities, the information, the knowledge that all the staff has, everything that's available to you as an athlete, including your off-season programs, it's hard to imagine a reason why you can't be in something approaching absolute upper echelon shape when you're talking about playing professional or high-level sports these days.
And if Nick Lewis, as a leader on the team, looks at me and says, I need everything you got today. Really, dude? Like, you need everything. Like, I don't know if what he says can carry a whole lot of weight
But the thing that he's got is his stats and resume, yeah, and the fact that he's still very productive, right? And ultimately, that's what nobody signs a new contract because they're in good shape, right? There's all kinds of failed athletes that are in fantastic shape. He's still really productive, and ultimately, that's what counts.
That's what I was going to ask you, like, and both of you. If he's sitting there with 80 yards a game and 6 catches and a touchdown, and he says that, do you not listen to him?
Or could I have eight catches and over 100 yards and a touchdown? Like, how much are you leaving out in the field being that overweight?
Do you take it as if he's not as dedicated?
Yes. Yes. Okay. He's like, there's no other way to put it. He's about, what, 30, 40 pounds bigger than the average receiver in the CFL?
And not the good kind.
No.
Interesting.
He's 5'10", 240. That's what he's listed at.
Yeah,
so that very easily could be 250, knowing the way things work. And right, it's probably 5'9", 250, knowing the way things work in there.
I was 250 in grade 8. Like, that's for 5'10". Wow. Interesting. Let's get into the Bombers, guys, on the Big Show, TSN 1290. Mike O'Shea addressing the media yesterday, Matt Nichols as well. And we'll start with his thoughts on if there's any extra energy with the thought of playoff redemption from last year's playoff game against BC in Vancouver.
I think it's just a chunk of film. Because it's early in the season and we've only got a certain number of games, the West Semi was the last game we played them. You pull that film up. You know, if we had, the last time we played them wasn't in the playoffs, you still might pull that game up and look, right? But the magnitude of that game and the ending, I guess, brings up these questions again. But it's part of the film study. You always want to look at what they did against you, not just what they did against their last three opponents, right? So did it give added energy? I don't know. I think the guys are aware.
That's interesting to me because Mike O'Shea is usually the guy who said, no, it's a new year, it's a new game, it's a new roster. To actually say, you know, they're aware and just acknowledge, not that he's focusing on it by any means or saying his team is, but just the acknowledgement of it is new to me from what a Mike O'Shea philosophy is.
Yeah, and to me, it's there's a bunch of horse pucks to this, more or less, because it's not like BC robbed you. Right? It's not like you got jobbed or something like that during the course of the game. It was up to the defense to get that off the BC offense off the field, and they couldn't do it in those final two drives and that sort of thing. So, and plus, ultimately, when you're talking about dropping the playoff game, not only is it your fault and you own it, but it is dead and gone completely. It's the joy and the reward of a playoff win is that's BC's and nothing's ever going to change it. You can't go back and snatch it. If there's another playoff opportunity upcoming here, then it's up to you to sort of rewrite the or write the new chapter upcoming. But what they accomplished, you can't do anything to change that. Even if Winnipeg goes and wins this regular season game, that doesn't go and lessen the blow of losing a playoff game, which is exponentially more important than any regular season game. So I really don't think that comes into play here at all. To me, the motivating force is that there's no question BC is one in a class maybe right now that the Bombers are trying to strive towards. I don't know that they as players would think that, but I think the vast majority of people that follow the CFL, I don't know that how many would have Winnipeg in with BC in the West right now. So that would be the big time motivating factor that for if I was on the team, in, as far as mindset is, to go into BC, to go grab a win, especially after the disappointment of the game, that sort of measuring stick game against Calgary, where he came out flat like that, you know, go in, make some noise here and cause BC some trouble and make a statement with this game.
Yeah, because the Bombers beat BC back-to-back games at the end of last season, both home and away. So I think it's more of, like Troy said there, you had your chance against Calgary. You know, don't waste another measuring stick game against BC here. I'm not so sure how much the playoff game really comes to their minds. Maybe it would be different if they had lost all three games to BC last year, and it's, you know, can we beat these guys? But, you know, they went 2-1 against them last year. So I think it's more so just kind of reestablishing a tone for this season. And realistically, you know, they're going to have to beat BC at least once this year if they want to finish in the top three in the West, because 2-2, I mean, that puts you likely two games. It doesn't really kill your playoff chances, but it puts you well behind the eight ball early on in the season in the West.
Would you ever use it as motivation, a playoff loss from the previous year against a team?
No, I wouldn't. I don't get it. It's dead and done. Like you can't go back and snatch any of the joy of the playoff win. What motivation is there? They took that and it's theirs forever. You can't go change history. A regular season win, and certainly you go win this game. It's not like, haha, we gotcha. No, you lost a playoff game, which is way more important. You die in that season when you lose the playoff game. So there's no motivation to me. I don't see it. If there was a rivalry here, well established with Winnipeg and BC, it's far from that at this point in time, then I could see it, you know, being that much more of a sting, or maybe there being more to it here. But this is simply, truly a regular season game here that the Bombers and like another measuring stick up here. You just failed against that Calgary game. That was real disappointing early in this season here, where you more or less went out there and crapped the bed against one of the heavyweights in the West. Well, now you get a chance to redeem yourself after a second half last week against Toronto that you look like you're in all kinds of trouble as a team in the first half there, and then sort of the miracle happened at halftime and you come out and completely reestablish yourself. Can you carry that forward here and now make a statement against BC? Ultimately, that's the question.
We're going to discuss O.J. Simpson's potential for parole today. He has a hearing at noon central. Also, David Pagnotta at the bottom of the next hour talking some hockey on the Royal Sports Power Hour. But when we come back to the Big Show, we'll get into some baseball talk on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 and Knott Auto Corp present the Blue Bus. Before every Winnipeg Blue Bombers home game this season, we're taking W fans to Investors Group Field in our Knott Auto Corp VIP Blue Bus. We'll pick you up and five buddies from a starting destination, drive you to the game, and when it's done, we'll take you back to wherever you started. Price includes six tickets to an upcoming Blue Bombers home game and free transportation to and from. Enter to win now at TSN1290.ca. Jim Tolth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki with you on The Big Show. We'll keep you up to date throughout the morning on the British Open as well. Yesterday, gentlemen, the Toronto Blue Jays lost again to the Boston Red Sox after that 15-inning battle the night before. They now try to salvage a split with the Red Sox at noon today before heading to Cleveland. 5-1 was the final. And Aaron Sanchez went 4 innings, 6 hits, 5 runs, 3 earned runs, 5 walks, just 2 strikeouts, had an ERA of 4.25 in the game, and the blister flared up again. What is with this blister, and why can't they fix it for him?
That's crazy, huh? And I don't know. It maybe it's 10 days ago or 2 weeks ago, I read a piece that was telling how a number of the pitchers in the MLB were being affected in a similar manner as Sanchez with the blisters, and they were talking about the balls, how they think that the balls have been juiced up or changed somewhat to help hitters hit home runs. The pitchers are actually talking about this, and whatever change that's been made to the balls is they're causing this sort of blister reaction that a bunch of the pitchers are dealing with. Remember, Stroman even had a blister a few starts ago as well, but this is just ridiculous here with Sanchez, isn't it? It's basically wasting the season for him, and you wonder going forward. You wonder how many pitchers are dealing with this still, and isn't it something that when you think about Major League Baseball, the Toronto Blue Jays, they would have the very best of everything available to them, and they can't figure out a way, whether it's having something slight on his finger, you'd assume the blister's happening in the same spot repeatedly. They can't do anything to thwart or stop this. It's brutal for Sanchez as a guy. We were talking yesterday, some people saying, you know, a Cy Young candidate sort of thing. Just unfortunate with him, what's going on. You see Donaldson again make another error yesterday. Just a heartbreaking sort of beatdown yesterday by the hands of the Red Sox. But this Sanchez thing is really unfortunate for a young, up-and-coming, hopeful superstar in the bigs.
They literally flew him to Kansas City this year and saw a specialist and had, not like surgery, but it operated on to fix it and was given more than enough time to heal. It's mind-boggling. And to your point, Troy, after Stroman complained about it, now Manfred, the commissioner of Major League Baseball, is looking into the balls. But it's just, like, I understand he struggles. He's been off half the season, or more than half of it. But this blister boggles my mind how they can't figure out a way to fix it.
Well, and check out this graph from theringer.com on days missed by Major League Baseball pitchers because of blister issues. And it just kind of limits it to the last 10 years or so. And through 2007 to 2015, you had the high mark at 80 days. And it's kind of in and around 80 to 40 days generally missed by pitchers through the first 8 years of the data. 2016, 2017, over 200 days missed by major league pitchers. So this is it's an epidemic.
Ball related.
And
right?
Justin Verlander and Rich Hill of the Dodgers are both saying that the seams on the ball feel lower than they have in the past. And Verlander, I think, said that, you know, it almost feels like there's no seams at all anymore. So it's funny because this kind of coincides too with the recent surge in home runs over the past few years. So, I mean, this is. It's a major issue for Major League Baseball because a team shouldn't lose, you know, like you guys have been saying, a stud number one pitcher because you doctored the balls a little bit to get a couple extra runs per game. I know you need offense, but to lose Aaron Sanchez for something as stupid as a blister, I mean, come on now. You basically the Jays season has been a train wreck almost from the get go, but you know, at least you could have the joy of watching him pitch every couple of days, and that's been taken away from him. And he loses, I mean, in a way it kind of helps the Jays because he loses, you know, a year of track record essentially for a contract. But sucks for the fans that don't get to watch a guy because his fingers are all messed up.
And the whole thing's fishy as well, right? Because MLB's saying, hey, no, the ball's like you're saying there. The commissioner's looking into it, and MLB was denying that there was any difference and that sort of thing right now. But how in the world do you have this epidemic happening unless something has changed with the ball?
Yeah, I totally agree. We got to take a break. I was going to ask you guys, though. We'll talk Jays at 8:30 with Laura Armstrong. Is Boston, the flip side of this and the Jays we're always talking about, is Boston the best team in the division? Tampa Bay's 3 back, Yankees 4.5.
Until the Yankees catch him again, yeah.
Yeah, I'll take the both sides. And they're going to make a move, too. They're not standing pat. Boston, yeah, Boston will improve, and then that gets scary.
We'll discuss O.J. Simpson when we come back to the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 and the Walt Morris Group of Companies, including Winnipeg Dodge, present the first ever TSN 1290 Golf for Kids Classic, and it will be on Tuesday, August the 15th at Southwood Golf and Country Club. It's a Texas Scramble Best Ball Tournament with proceeds to benefit the Children's Hospital Foundation of Manitoba and Kidsport Manitoba. Registration per person is $150, $500 for a foursome. It includes 18 holes of golf, card rental, pre- and post-game buffet-style food and drink, freebies, plus a chance to win cool prizes. There will also be fun planned for select holes throughout the course, hosted by our friends at the Pine Winnipeg, Royal Sports, Santa Lucia Pizza, J&M Window and Door Company, Darcy Bain Physiotherapy, Windeck Limited, Ashley Furniture, Mr. Lube, FXR Adrenaline Unlimited, the Viscount Gord Hotel, United Firefighters of Winnipeg, Local 867, Star Building Supplies, and Avalon Foundation Repair. Space is limited and available on a first-come, first-serve basis. There are a few spots still available. Visit tsn1290.ca. This is the Big Show, Royal Sports Power Hour, 5 minutes past the hour. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki. And gentlemen, O.J. Simpson is up for parole. There's a hearing today at noon Central Time. Of course, just to recap, he's in prison after being convicted in October of 2008 on 12 counts, 3 counts of conspiracy, 1 count of burglary with the use of a deadly weapon, 2 counts each of kidnapping, robbery, assault, and coercion, all with the use of a deadly weapon. He was paroled earlier on a couple of those charges. The remaining charges still remain. He was given a minimum of 9 years and a maximum of 33 years. It's interesting because the judge could have gone life and did the 33 years, and the judge in the case, Glass, has denied the accusation that he made 33 years. Random number after he was ordered to pay $33.5 million to Nicole Brown Simpson and Ronald Goldman's family. Regardless, it's a different issue now, but your thoughts on him being paroled? And it's likely that he will be.
I really couldn't care less one way or the other here. If there was someone who was going to say something stupid and blow in their chance for parole, you think it could quite possibly be O.J. Simpson. But, you know, at this point in time, still one of the – it will be one of the most remarkable things to happen for our generation for sure, the whole thing, how it played out. And it's not – you know, it's not difficult to remember the brutality of the murders and the outrageousness of the trial, all the rest of it. The $33 million still owed in the civil lawsuit that to Nicole Brown Simpson's family and Ron Goldman, and he comes out – if he is paroled, he will receive, it's estimated at $25,000 a month from his pension that the families can't touch, so that's what he'll live off of. And you wonder if at 70 years old he'll stay out of trouble or not, but it really doesn't matter. He could die tomorrow. I couldn't care less. The dude was guilty of murder and just a heinous individual, and certainly the most remarkable fall from grace that exists for as far as athletes go. Just a real tragic what he did to Nicole Brown Simpson and stuff is just horrible.
And I guess that's a question. Like, where is everybody on O.J. Simpson right now?
Well, this
wasn't convicted of that, convicted of other crimes, being paroled for that. And the likelihood of him being paroled for that is because he's already gotten parole on some of the other charges that he was convicted of. So it is everything I read, they're everybody's expecting him to get paroled today.
Well, and it's a bit different for me, too, compared to kind of you guys and your generation, right? Because I'm assuming you kind of caught the tail end of his career in the NFL, and you saw all the Hertz commercials and the movies and that sort of thing. You know, people in my generation, kind of in the mid-20s...
just saw the white Bronco.
He's just a criminal.
Yeah.
Honestly, that's all he's been in my, you know, as far back as I can remember. I don't even know if I was old enough to kind of remember the Bronco chase. So, like, I've seen videos of him play with the Bills and that sort of thing and with the electric company, but he's always just, like, he's always been a criminal to me more so than a football player. So it's a bit of, like, I guess I just don't have the same sort of outlook on OJ as it comes to, I think, you know, people, you know, middle-aged and up, because you guys kind of caught him as, like, you almost probably know him maybe more as a football player, or as maybe half and half as football player and a guy who's been kind of in trouble with the law.
Yeah, I know him as Nordberg from the Naked Gun movies, and I knew who he was prior to that. I never saw him play. You know, I couldn't say that I know where he was considered as a Hall of Famer and one of the best running backs ever play, but my experience with him was a post Hall of Fame football player is what I grew up with, OJ, until the incidents.
Myself as well. Like, to me, he was a legendary football player. I don't have a recollection of, of watching him play. I'm sure that I would have, but to me, just the legendary status is kind of. And then, of course, the movies and the Hertzes and the real likable character. We all know the story from that manner, right? But at this point in time, I just really couldn't care less about whether he's breathing or not.
I'm kind of surprised that maybe I shouldn't be, but I am surprised that a lot of sports stations are going to be airing the parole hearing. I'm kind of like you. Like, I don't care at all. I don't really know why this is a major story.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's a major story if a sports station is carrying it because of his background, clearly, but of the injustice of the whole. Like, this transcended. Like, I grew up hearing about the Kennedy assassination and Armstrong walking on the moon. For my generation, this is where were you when OJ was in the white Bronco?
It's one of the Challenger blowing up for me, O.J. Simpson, 9/11. Those are the three biggest things off the top of my head I can
Reagan getting shot. I remember our school in elementary school when President Reagan was shot, there was an announcement that came on that said we're letting everybody go early today, all this stuff. Like, those are the things that stood out to me. O.J. Simpson, I was supposed to go to the bar. I was in college, cut lawns all day, waiting for my buddy who was a farmer to come in from moving pipe. And just kept waiting while this was on, water pipes, and waiting while this came on. And, you know, he would call every 2 hours. He goes, I'm running behind. I'm not going to make it into town today. And I'm like, that's okay, because I've been glued to CNN for 6 hours now. Mm-hmm. And that's my and I guess, like, does it matter to you that if he's 40 miles south of Las Vegas in an institution, if he's permitted out, he's probably going to have to – well, he's going to have to stay in charge in touch with his parole hearing. But they're saying because it's such a remote area that he likely will be able to leave Nevada on – you know, there will be circumstances around it.
His the whole murder thing doesn't come into play.
Yeah, that's why it's not an issue.
He's not in prison for that.
Yeah.
Right.
It has nothing to do
so
with that.
That's why I'm not really – like, I don't really care about any of this, to be honest with you, because none of that's going to come into play. He's not going to be going back into prison for the crimes that he – likely committed back in 94. So that's why I wonder why this is even a big, like, I'm not going to take any time out of my day to sit down and, oh, is OJ going to be cleared on parole? Like, I don't really care. He was caught with all the charges he was 8 years ago. It has no buried on me from what happened 20 years ago.
Yeah, and I don't see it at all as a sports story. It serves to some degree of a news story, but I think for the most part, the vast majority of people who either, you know, regardless of your age, I think people have more or less, they're tired. This is an old tired type story of an old man that got away with murder. That's basically all there is to it.
Well, here's the other thing that's going on in the States around it and on sports stations. And, of course, it's not on ESPN because they employ Ray Lewis. But the other people are going, if Ray Lewis can work for ESPN, why can't O.J. Simpson, if he's paroled, work covering football or in and around the media? Now, that's clearly never going to happen.
Well, very different circumstances as well, like really different. So I don't think you just can't make such a broad sweeping statement like that and how remarkably different the circumstances are of the two cases.
Are you sure it's that different, though?
Oh, it's, well, yeah. One involved a woman and a man where his ex-wife was viciously murdered, and the other was some crazy stuff that went on outside of a nightclub where it's quite possible that Mr. Luce wasn't directly involved.
But he took a...
Nothing was really proven with it.
He made a plea deal and testified against that there was murders, and yeah, he was there, and he was involved.
As whether this is politically correct or not, types of murder to me are very different, and I think this is a very different sort of situation, night and day, even.
What are your thoughts on Ray Lewis working in the media, but O.J. Simpson sort of this villain?
Sort of a villain who grotesquely and hideously murdered his ex-wife? Like, come on, man.
Well, although I agree with you that wasn't proven, Ray Lewis literally testified about being involved in murders. Murder's murder, if you want to get into what it is, but one guy testified about his involvement in a murder in order to get off of it, and another guy was never convicted of one.
And to me, murder is not murder. You got a couple, you got like three, four guys on either side of a situation that things get hot going back and forth. I understand anger of that nature and how things can escalate and get out of control. When you are stalking an ex-wife and you horribly kill her, slashing her throat, et cetera, don't tell me that they're the same sort of action.
For legalities, I know what you're saying.
I don't care about the legality.
Allegedly.
I'm talking about natural law.
Yeah, I don't know enough about the Ray Lewis case to try and compare the two, to be honest with you. I mean,
well, and I'm not trying to compare. I'm just saying, fair enough, the circumstances are different, clearly. But you have one guy who is involved in murders.
Yeah.
And he's working and is still in the Hall of Fame and is working covering the sport that he played in.
And it bothers a lot of people.
And you have another guy who was never, like, convicted of it, which I understand. I don't buy it either. However, on paper, there's one guy that is literally still a hero. And there's another guy who is, as he said, if I get paroled, I'm fearing for my own life.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be fine with neither of them being on TV, to be completely honest with you. But it's, I mean, I don't know. I don't really have a strong feeling about OJ being on TV or not being on TV because of Ray Lewis. Like, I don't really look at them as being similar situations.
It is an interesting perspective you give because I, again, never thought of it that way. But that's how your generation sees it. And even with this hearing, you're like, you could care less. To me, it's just another criminal on parole that used to be famous or up for parole. That's an interesting perspective, say, to mine and Troy's, who literally this was...
The story of your lifetime, just about.
Yeah, one of the major events in our lifetime, for sure. The hearing is at noon. I'm sure that the afternoon ride with Hustler and Rick Ralph will be on that and give you the updates on that too. And if you care, if you'll be watching or if you won't and could care less about what happens with O.J. Simpson, who is up for parole today from a Las Vegas, Nevada prison. We'll take a break here on The Big Show. When we come back, we'll hear some more from head coach Mike O'Shea and maybe talk a little bit Jets, too, some hockey. David Pegnata is going to talk hockey with us at the bottom of the hour as well here on The Big Show on the Royal Sports Power Hour, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
We'll get into some hockey at the bottom of the hour here on the Royal Sports Power Hour on The Big Show, TSN 1290. David Pegnata, thefourthperiod.com, NHL news and notes still to come. We'll get back to the Bombers now. They'll leave today to Vancouver to take on the BC Lions tomorrow. Once again, Manuk Dencher, Blue Bomber game day coverage with Darren Bombing, Troy Westwood, and Chris Walby tomorrow night at 7 p.m. And then, of course, the game is on TSN at 9 p.m. live from BC. We'll get into some more comments from head coach Mike O'Shea and Matt Nichols in just a moment, but Matthias Gosen was fined for a block last week. I didn't even see that. I didn't even get the fine when it came out.
Derek Taylor tweeted out the block soon after the game, and just holding it in high regard and high praise. And I retweeted it, and it was the sort of quintessential thing you want to see your old lineman do, where you a guy's coming at the line, he popped him down, the guy fell down on the ground, and then Matthijs Gosin sort of jumped on top of him to, you know, after a bit of a pancake block, just to keep him down on the ground. That's what old linemen are supposed to do, man. That's my understanding. I had no idea that was a finable offense, and sure enough, he gets fined by the league for it. Are you freaking kidding me? Like, I know that there's a small window on quarterbacks, and there's, you know, a higher raised expectation on hitting and what's safe and what's not safe. But if an old lineman can't do it, Matthijs Gosin did in this game against Toronto. Like, it is absolutely outrageous. I'm going to search for it here.
I just saw it.
Yeah, so I'm going to retweet it this second here again from Derek Taylor. But it is a perfect blast to the D lineman, and it just knocks him down right on his back and then jumps on top of him, sort of thing, to make sure you keep him down on the ground. And to get fined, like, that's the kind of fine that happens where all the guys in the locker room step up and pay the fine for him. And I would assume it's because once the guy's on the ground, there's a little bit of a lead with a head where there's helmet-to-helmet contact after that. And so I understand that. But, man, that, like, a guy like Chris Walby seeing that's a fine would just shake his head. That's the way you're supposed to play.
You don't, when he's, you knock him flat on his back, you don't have a problem with him jumping on that and hitting him in the head?
Well,
like, he's not getting up.
Yeah. Well, I understand, like, the helmet to helmet contact that happened because of the situation, but I mean, there's a lot of, and he's leading with his head in theory, but he's also an old lineman trying to keep a guy down on the ground. I think you're asking a lot from an old lineman to stay away from that type of a play.
And
you want the guy to stay down on the ground.
I didn't think he was leading with his helmet there because he pushes with his arms. Like, it's not like he is only using the crown of his helmet to finish off the play there. He's
it's more
just
that
bending
he's falling
over.
Forward.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
and big, like, fella falling forward, more or less.
I mean, you would know this, Troy, but that's a play where in the film room,
absolutely,
you play it, rewind, play it,
times,
rewind,
yep,
and everybody gets up on their feet,
yep,
and basically carries Matthijs Gosin out of the room.
Exactly.
Like, I mean, that, yeah, that's a fine that's going to be paid by the Bombers players, and I don't think Matthijs Gosin will lose a cent personally there. And even if that is a fine, I hope the Bombers finish all their plays like that on the O-line. And it kind of brought back a little bit of Dominic Picard a few years ago with the Bombers. Yeah. The Angry Frenchman, I think, was his nickname. I'm okay with the O-line being, and I don't even think that's dirty, but I'm okay with them being kind of straddling the line of what's clean and what's fair. I hope, hey, if they finish every play like that, not a problem for me all season.
I don't have a problem with the hit. I like it. I get what you guys are saying. I do think it's finable. I don't think you can, when he's out like that, not out cold, but just on his back, you can just put your hands out and hold him. You don't have to, like, even if they don't make helmet-to-helmet contact, that's fine. But when he hits him in the head with his helmet on his back, he's a defenseless player. Is he not defenseless? Like, he's not getting up. It's not like he was knocked down. He was knocked off his feet.
That is,
and then takes a helmet.
All O-linemen are taught to do exactly this. A guy's lying on his back. You don't give him a chance to get. That is so instinctual. To try and get an O-lineman to not think like that is, it's an impossibility. To be a finable offense, I could see maybe a warning, but it's not like there's speed or anything like that. It is helmet to helmet, but you got a big fella who's, you watch it, he's bent over and then just sort of falls down towards the turf to lay on the guy. There is some.
Well, he jumps on him. He doesn't fall down. It's not like he was leaving his feet and fell on him.
But, I mean, the thing, too, with the whole pancake, I mean, if Nichols rolls out to that side of the field and the Argos defensive lineman gets up and chases him down, then he is back in the play.
Yeah, he doesn't even know what's happening.
Gosin's just doing what he's been taught to do since
job, yeah,
he first stepped onto the field with cleats
and
shoulder pads.
I love the hit. I love the block. I just think that you can literally just lay on him after that. You don't have to jump and then helmet to helmet. I see why it's a fine is what I'm saying. I also see why you would help pay that fine.
It would be real tough for him to lay down on him in a gentle manner, avoiding the helmet altogether, just by the way his body is situated. That is absolute crap. With some of the hits that you see happen and all the rest of it, like to find an old lineman for this action is a remarkable thing to do.
And Jeffco, or whoever the bomber was that hit Ricky Ray, didn't get fine at the end of the game, right?
He did get fined.
Okay.
It wasn't penalized, I don't think, during the course of the game, but it was fined later on. Yeah.
That's what I was going to ask. I'd rather see a fine for that.
Yeah.
This is the Big Show on TSN 1290. As for the Bombers themselves, do we have time for a clip here? Let's get into, I guess, Mike O'Shea's comments on if there's a different game plan for facing Travis Lule as opposed to Jonathan Jennings.
I think we prepare the same way regardless. They're both mobile quarterbacks. Systematically, defensively, you change a ton when a quarterback changes, really. It might be if you go from a non-mobile quarterback to a mobile quarterback, you pull out something that you have available for that scenario. But for the most part, their system's their system. They'll be who they are, regardless of their quarterback, and we'll be who we are.
There's going to be a lot of people that forget how mobile Travis Lule was, and I believe still is. I know he's 32 years old, but he hasn't really played much the last 3 years or so. Those legs are going to be fresh. He's going to be geeked beyond anything to have this opportunity to start again after standing on the sidelines waiting to get healthy. Finally, he's healthy. Beware of Travis Lule in a huge way. And this kind of, because it's a little bit scary. You'll have Richie Hall and Mike O'Shea telling the players how good Travis Lule is, right? They know. And the young players, the guys on that defense, I don't know that any of them were around when Travis Lule was playing. He was really good. He's healthy right now, and that makes him very good and very dangerous this week.
Half hour of Hockey Talk is on its way next on the Royal Sports Power Hour, including David Pagnotta joining us on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Pick up your official TSN 1290 discount golf card today. Hit the greens throughout the summer with great 2-for-1 deals at a multitude of Manitoba golf courses, including Carmen Golf Club, Scottswood Links Golf Course, Kingswood Golf and Country Club, La Verande Golf Course, Bell Acres Golf and Country Club, and the Steinbeck Fly-In Golf Club, just to name a few. Book a tee time and show your card for great rates. Cards are only $34.95 each. Some restrictions apply. To purchase your card and for a complete list of participating courses, visit tsn1290.ca. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you and on the Big Show, the Royal Sports Power Hour. And well, speaking of golf, we'll keep you up to date. Brooks Koepka has now tied for the lead at the British Open with Jordan Spieth. Both are 4 under par. Koepka's on the 13th hole. Spieth is on the 14th hole. Ian Poulter is on 18 at 3 under. And then there's three guys tied at 2 under. And two of them are done, Norin and Manley. So Spieth and Koepka leading at 4 under right now at the British Open.
Yeah, it's stupid early, but Austin Conley, the Canadian we talked with Bob Weeks about yesterday, who's in his first Open, of course, at -1, tied for 7th early on Thursday. Which is pretty cool. Yeah.
Interesting. Very interesting. We'll keep you up to date this morning throughout the Big Show. And, of course, so will Kevin Ohl on the Don Vito Roundtable starting at 11 and the afternoon ride and the Gondola Pizza warm-up with Hustler and Mr. Rick Ralph throughout the afternoon as well. Some hockey talk now for the next half hour. NHL news and notes around the corner. But welcome back into our program, our good friend from the fourthperiod.com, David Pagnotta. How are you, sir?
Fantastic, gentlemen. How's it going?
Good. How's your golf game this summer?
opposite of those guys.
Well, let's talk hockey then, because it's the same as mine then. What are you hearing around the guys like Iginla, Jágr? Is anybody going to give these guys a chance?
I think so, at least definitely in the case of Jágr. You know, his mindset is he's playing next season. He's just got to find the right situation and the right home. You know, this is now the time of year where, for a lot of these guys, it kind of drags on. So it's kind of wait and see mode. to see, you know, what these teams end up doing. You know, after the first, say, 10 days of free agency, GMs start to travel, management guys start to, you know, take some days off. They get to enjoy their summers a little bit, too. For a lot of them, that's the case. And, you know, every now and again, they'll pick up the phone, they'll see what they're doing, they'll see if there's any options available. And you know, these guys are workaholics in this business. So even on vacation, they're going to check every now and again. But this is really the off season. So, you know, for a lot of these guys, for Markov, for Yager, it's and so on, Iginla, it's wait and see. And I think for, you know, in the case of a guy like Jerome Iginla, who's kind of teetering on the fence as to what he's going to do, it's got to be the absolute perfect scenario and perfect situation for him. You know, if the Chicago Blackhawks come calling and say, we'll give you $1 million, we like our chances this year. Do you like, you know, what do you think about him? Do you want to give this a ride? Then this is something that he's got to, you know, take into account, and he's got to talk to his family about, which I'm sure he already has. But now it's just a matter of the right opportunity presenting itself. Yager is prepping for the season. You know, just a matter of, is it a team like Montreal? Is it going to be another club? Maybe the Pittsburgh Penguins, you know, start kicking around again and say, hey, why don't you come back? You know, we'll give you a one-year deal with, you know, similar to what he had last season with the Florida Panthers in his two-year deal. You know, it's base salary of, say, $4 million, and then, you know, incentives past that, or $3 million, and he can make up to, you know, $5.25 million, $5.5 million, with, you know, different incentives in place. But really, this is just kind of a waiting game, and whatever the best opportunity arises for these guys, that's what they'll kind of jump at.
David, the Leon Draisaitl situation is really fascinating. You look at a guy who has surged in the 3 years that he's played. Last year, 77 points in 82 games. That was good for eighth overall in scoring in the NHL. You've got the Cat who's sort of setting the bar on the roster with McDavid at 12.5. What ends up happening in Edmonton with Draisaitl?
I think we're seeing shorter term with him. I mean, unless something dramatic happens in contract talks, I think we see a shorter term. You know, some obviously he's going to get high dollars, but might not see a full 8 year term like we saw with, you know, McDavid or Price or whomever else with their respective clubs. Simply because his situation is a little different. Everybody knows, you know, obviously that Connor McDavid is going to be, you know, continuing this pace that he's on. He's going to, you know, continue to bring on awards. Lead the league in scoring, do all that fun stuff. But with Draisaitl, it's a little bit different. You don't want to cash in just yet. There's still some uncertainty with regards to his game. He's a hell of a hockey player and you know, a great guy. And you know, everybody anticipates the offensive production to continue. But there's still a little bit of uncertainty with regards to his play, which obviously has led to the hesitancy in signing him by now. So I would suspect, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if he gets 8 years, but at the same time, it wouldn't surprise me, you know, at all if we see a shorter term deal, probably a 4 or 5 year contract. So he's still an RFA by the end of it. And then, you know, you lead to another ridiculously large deal. He's going to get either way. You know, the kid's going to get paid. It's just a matter of what type of term and dollars they can work out and how they're going to structure it as well. You know, everybody's, especially now, with, you know, focused on that, you know, potential lockout, hate that word, but potential lockout protection in terms of, you know, how the salary is going to go, how much is going to go towards signing bonus to kind of utilize that bit of an escrow escape out of that world. So a lot of variables in place. It's not as simple as, you know, hey, we'll give you $9 million a season. It's how's that money being divided. And, you know, that's kind of, you know, where things are at right now.
As we head towards August, the arbitration hearings start, and for Connor Hellebuyck, the only remaining RFA for the Winnipeg Jets, his is on August 1st. What do you think he gets? What do you think he's asking for? What do you think the Jets are offering?
You know, I'll be honest, I haven't heard too much with regards to what's happening in you know, on that side of things. But certainly the dynamic has changed for the Winnipeg Jets in terms of their goaltending. And, you know, you know, them kind of deciding that Steve Mason is the guy for the next, you know, couple of years, then it's, you know, the urgency to get Hellebuyck locked up to a deal that's, you know, certainly beneficial for him, more so than the team. isn't really a necessity. You know, it's not up there. So they've got their goaltending in place, at least they feel. So, you know, we don't need to necessarily rush into something. We don't have to, you know, focus on, and this goes for a few teams as well with some of their other players, but just, you know, specifically with Hellebuck, it's the situation where, you know, you're going to be in a situation where there's going to be a battle between the pipes. We've made our decision on who the guy is going to be. So now it comes down to, if you want to play, then this is the type of contract we're willing to give you. Otherwise, we'll go through the arbitration process, which nobody really likes. And, you know, it might end up being a Winnipeg Jet come the start of the season, or we might go in a different direction and you know, weigh our options. I think that's kind of where the mindset is with you know, Chevy right now and what his staff is thinking, because they've already got, you know, they feel the number one in place.
Kevin Shattenkirk has come out and more or less said that he feels the Rangers are on the cusp of something big. What are your thoughts about the state of the union for the New York Rangers?
Maybe he means they're going to be doing a bunch of trades to fix the rest of the roster. I'm not sold on the team just yet. You know, I'm still in Henrik Lundqvist's corner in terms of the goaltending. I know everyone in the last couple of years is starting to ride him a little bit. He's getting up there in age. He's not the same. Yada yada yada. Well, you know, for a while he had better help on defense, or at least the guys in front of him were playing better, and that hasn't been the case the last couple of seasons. They've shifted the mold of the blue line, which should make things easier for Henrik Lundqvist. His responsibilities will naturally, as goaltenders get older, decrease. So he's not going to be playing 70 games a season, or at least he shouldn't. But the defense in front of him is stronger. So that should effectively help his play. Back end and in between the pipes, I'm not overly concerned with regards to the Rangers. Up front, that's where they got to figure things out a little bit. And yeah, they still have some really good players, but they need, you know, the guys like Chris Kreider to step up significantly. You know, Zuccarello's got to continue to lead from an offensive standpoint. You know, these are guys, they moved out Derek Stepan, which, you know, you lose a number two center from my perspective on that, you know, on that team. And, you know, you hope that some of the other guys kind of, you know, come together and, you know, make that loss feel, you know, basically negated. But really it comes down to the younger players, you know, Zuccarello kind of leading the charge from an offensive standpoint, Rick Nash as well, obviously. But it really comes down to the younger guys on the team taking that next step, whether it's Hayes or Kreider or whomever else. This is, you know, Zibanejad, for example. These are guys that are going to have to up their offensive game. If they do that, then this team could be more competitive than I certainly anticipate them to be. But now the question marks really point to the offense and who's leading the charge up front on a consistent basis. And can they spread that depth around offensively like they had a couple of seasons ago? That's ultimately what it's going to come down to for them. Because I like the additions on the back end. I like the mold they made, and I feel like that will certainly help Henrik Lundqvist, but at the end of the day, you still got to put the puck in the net, as we've seen from some of the other teams out there. You look at the Pittsburgh Penguins and Chicago Blackhawks, et cetera. So we got to see what the Rangers can do offensively, and that'll ultimately determine where they're going to end up, you know, come end of June next season.
David Pagnotta, thefourthperiod.com, joining us on the Big Show this morning, TSN 1290. Speaking of the Blackhawks, what do you like, what do you don't like? Where do you see them with the moves they made, especially in the Central Division?
I like them because it gives their younger guys the opportunity to take that next step. It's something that we've seen with the Pittsburgh Penguins as well. You know, it's letting the younger guys kind of fit into regular spots on the roster, which has certainly led to their flexibility in moving out guys from a salary cap perspective. I like them, you know, they've brought back some familiarity as well, which certainly can help with them. You know, with regards to an offensive side of things and, you know, the loss of Marian Hossa is certainly A, unexpected, and B, it sucks if you're a Blackhawks fan. If you're in the room, it certainly does. He's a guy that was, and is still loved in the room, but obviously health comes first. But for them, it now comes down to letting the younger guys perform. And, you know, you move out a couple things, you shift the roster a little bit. You know, the move with Columbus, I thought, was it's certainly a risky one. I think the overall better player is ending up in Columbus, but they bring back that familiarity, like I said, and the offensive prowess. that comes with it. And you certainly saw guys like Kane and Taves being happy about that kind of move. I like what they have. I like what they've brought to the table. I like their team last season. Right now it's now them getting a little bit of extra breathing space from a health perspective. They had the extra time off. They can regroup. The younger kids get to practice a lot more and perform a lot more in the offseason in preparation for the season. When you've got good, young, talented kids and you give them that opportunity to play, you're giving them – I'm not saying you got to throw them out there for 18 minutes, but if you're throwing them out there for 13, 14 minutes a game, but you're giving them power play opportunity, you're putting them in offensive chances and boosting their confidence, it leads to usually good things. And Quenneville certainly has got a handle on that over the course of his career and with the Blackhawks as well. So I think they're going to be a very competitive team this season and probably one of the cup favorites.
David, we appreciate your time as always. Thanks for doing this and enjoy the rest of your week.
You got it, guys. You too.
Thanks so much, David. Take care, man. Hey, you're going to continue to ask people we speak to who are related in some way to the NHL about the Chicago Blackhawks, hoping someone jumps on your they're going to miss the playoffs bandwagon, aren't you?
Well, no, I find them one of the more intriguing teams with the moves they made. Like, I agree with David. I think the better player went to Columbus. I think those guys are older. Mm-hmm. This is a team in the Blackhawks. Yeah, I'll probably keep asking. Who did we talk to yesterday that sort of agreed with me? Said that they're going to see a major decline.
Well, Gus Katsaros, I'm not sure he agreed with you.
Well, he said, he goes, I could see them struggling. Like, I agree with Gus's thoughts yesterday on the show. They're going to be so heavy dependent on their top six forwards. If those guys have off seasons or don't perform or don't have really good seasons, I don't think their bottom six two lines are going to help. I think their defense
Hello.
Is weaker.
Look at home here for the what you're saying, top six, bottom six.
Well, yeah.
How dependent, yeah, are they?
I think the Jets have a top nine.
Every team? Doesn't that kind of describe every team, though, man? Top nine with the Jets? Yeah?
You don't think so?
That they're dependent on the top nine as opposed to the top six?
When I brought this up, of the Blackhawks not making the playoffs, we debated this, and I'll ask the same question. Who do you like better, the Jets top forwards, the Jets forwards as a whole, or the Blackhawks? Who has more skill? Who has more talent? Who do you like better? And I'm fully aware of the pedigree that comes with the rings that are on the top two lines in Chicago. Who do you like better, talent and skill-wise, the Jets forwards or the Blackhawks?
If you're asking me who I think is going to be more successful this season, I don't know. I really don't know the answer to that.
I think talent-wise, the Jets might have the upper edge a little bit.
But I think they do.
I think one thing and I'm kind of leaning more towards, you're slowly bringing me towards the Blackhawks dropping off big bandwagon, but I think one thing we kind of skim past is Joel Quenneville
exactly.
versus Paul Maurice.
Yep.
And the Jets might have more talented forwards, but you know, are they able to mesh better as a five-man unit than what Chicago does?
Yep. I fully understand that. I'm just saying, on paper, let's go to the defense. Who do you like better? The sixth defenseman, and say everybody's healthy, the sixth defenseman for the Blackhawks or the Jets' sixth defenseman? Healthy for 82 games.
But unfortunately, you can't just look at paper. You also have to imagine, think, or take into consideration the systems involved.
I fully understand that. But you think I'm crazy.
To say they're going to miss the playoffs.
And I'm showing you where my...
craziness
I think they make the playoffs, miss the playoffs because of the division. Not that they have the massive drop-off. I just look at the division. I have Dallas and Winnipeg pushing, if not getting into the playoffs, and two teams have to fall out. And if I'm looking at teams that aren't – I got Nashville, and I got Minnesota, St. Louis, and Chicago. And if you're asking me about those four teams, I'm saying Chicago – isn't as good as they used to be. And they don't have the depth.
You're saying they're a lot worse than they used to be if you're saying they're outside the playoffs, man.
No, I'm saying what I said. And we'll see once the games play and the systems and everything else. But on paper, I like the forwards for the Jets better. I like their sixth defenseman better. And I like the Blackhawks goaltending better. And so fight it out. We'll take a break here. NHL News and Notes next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Jordan Spieth continues to lead the Open at 4-under. Brooks Koepka is 4-under as well. Spieth's on 15th. Koepka's on 14th. Jordan Spieth just went rough to the sand to about a 10 or 12 foot putt for par. Recovers well, really well.
It's very annoying.
Let's talk about this a bit. How come you hate Jordan Spieth again?
Well, it's a sports hate first. Like he seems like a genuinely
nice guy. Yeah.
So nice. I don't know. Maybe it's because he just made the par putt there. Yeah.
Jesus.
I think it's just all the Tiger comparisons early on. Just because he won those first two majors.
And a bunch of that JT was driven home when Leibel was sitting in that chair and was gushing over him like he was, and literally thought he was the next coming of Tiger Woods. And we're like, dude, settle down.
I think there's something about golf. I always felt this way about Jim Furyk, too. Like I don't like kind of the plotters. You know, like the guys that are just, you're like 280, 290 in the fairway, and you hit, like, there's nothing really exciting or sexy. Like, I could watch Rory McIlroy and see the perfect swing, somehow hits at 350 out there. Like, I can get behind that when I watch, and Dustin Johnson and Jason Day, too, but just
the boring sort of game. Yeah.
Just, like, just kind of slow, like, up and down the middle.
I crave a boring game. Kevin Owen and I went out on Tuesday, and I felt like Spieth. I zigzagged to every green. And I had the odd par, the odd
you
bogey.
Think that's how Spieth feels?
Well, yeah. He just went rough to sand, to green, to par putt. And I did that twice. It was just like, there was a par I had on Tuesday. I didn't see the fairway. I didn't touch the fairway.
Been there, done that. How about Rory saying in that Travelers tournament, where for the final 3 days, he used a different driver each day, like to be a pro golfer and for him to trying to sell people that his putting game is fine and dandy now, in a tournament a couple of weeks ago when you have a different putter, like a different flat stick, 3 days, three rounds in a row, that's amazing stuff.
How about Jason Day's high tops today? He's wearing white Nike high tops. I don't know if they got spikes on him or not, but he's going the course all black with literally golf high tops.
There are some realms of fashion right now pushing the boundaries with whether you're talking, you know, shirts, pants, shoes. There has yet to be an atrocity to the degree, though, that we saw. I think it was Ricky Fowler led this charge with the elasticized bottom. That little foray for a week or two into that, thank God, it died in a hurry on the course. But there's a couple things that you see and you just know right away that, no, that's a miss. Yeah, that's
like
a swing and a
miss. The golf's version of the mullet. Like, everyone makes mistakes. Everyone makes mistakes. I'm not a big fan. I don't like the high tops. Although I do like Justin Thomas's look today. He's got the tie and the cardigan on.
Oh, yeah, I do like that. The cardigan's a good look, as you know.
But he's got the tie loosened and the shirt unbuttoned like it's about 150 at the pal.
Which makes it so much
better. After a long work day, right? Like, to me, you got to have it all snazzed up. You got to be tight and ready.
Shoot a 68 on the course, then to the pal, shoot a 68 tomorrow.
Drinks after work. Leibel likes Spieth.
No, likes is way
love
too.
Love Spieth?
Yeah.
I'm out on like Spieth. Gushing. I don't want to like anything Leibel likes. I know you're listening.
We had a bet, actually, who would win the next major after Spieth won the two in a row, and it was Spieth or McIlroy. And we're both waiting still.
I see.
Isn't it something also you hear some of the stats for how old the winner has been at the British Open for, like the last four winners of majors that have been over a certain age have all been at the Open, and the average age is so much higher and all these sorts of things. There's a lot, some real, I know some people don't care about history and that sort of thing, but there's some real long, interesting stat lines attached to this tournament.
Only one note today on the NHL news and notes I wanted to bring up with you guys. It's regarding the Carolina Hurricanes and the potential sale of them. Since having reached the play, or the Hurricanes have only reached the playoffs once since winning the Stanley Cup in 06, and have seen their attendance dip 32.3% from their roughly 17,000 average attendance 10 years ago to an average of 11,776 this year. The team's average fill capacity sat at 63%, worst among NHL teams. And the decline of attendance is the highest for any franchise in the four major sports over the past decade.
Wow.
And they are up for sale of Peter Carmanos Jr. mulling over an offer from the former, was it Texas Rangers owner?
Yeah, for $500 million.
Forbes valued the franchise at $230 million earlier this year.
And it's the offer is $500 million, I think.
I believe, yeah.
Yeah. So is this a buy and move? Right? Like
I think they said it would be a buy and stay.
Huh. Yeah.
But
buy and
that
stay
can
for
change.
A season or something. And which is, it's unfortunate that you got sort of a precarious situation there because this team certainly looks to be on the uptick too, right? A lot of people like them as a sort of a dark horse team this year.
See, and that would be interesting if they push for the playoffs, whether they're sold or not, what the attendance does in Carolina. That was interesting news and note for me, though, that stood out. We'll take a break, and when we come back, Ed Tate from BlueBombers.com on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
The TSN 1290 Summer Street Team is at Winnipeg's best events all summer long. We'll be at concerts, sporting events, charity fundraisers, and more. We'll be bringing our Spin to Win prize wheel to give you the chance to win great stuff like Jets gear, Tim Hortons and McMunn and Yates gift cards, a Burton snowboard with bindings from Alter Ego Sports, Winnipeg road trip getaways from Explore Egan, Minnesota, and much more. You'll find us next at MTS Super Spike this weekend, July 21st and 22nd at Maple Grove Rugby Park. For more information on these great events and the TSN 1290 Summer Street Team, visit tsn1290.ca. The Big Show, Jim, Troy, and Brandon. And speaking of Super Spike, I think we have a pair of tickets we can give away right now, as it is this weekend. And this is just breaking. Husser and I will be emceeing the stage to bring out the bands.
This is breaking news.
Yes.
Surprised we didn't play the music for that.
And as per my involvement, I think it entailed three other people couldn't do it. So it was like, do you want to help Hustler? Sure. Okay. So pair of tickets to this weekend, Super Spike, the Sam Roberts Band, of course, the headliner on Saturday night. Great bands throughout the weekend on stage. And, of course, you can watch some volleyball and enjoy the weekend out there. 780-1290, two passes to this weekend, Super Spike for the 12th caller through 780-1290. We welcome back into the program now Mr. Ed Tate from BlueBombers.com. How are you, sir?
Fantastic, fellas. How are you?
Good, thank you. I know you'll be leaving for BC today, which probably means I won't see you out in Speedo and rocking the Super Spike.
You never would.
You never would, eh? That's surprising to me, Ed.
No, I would not go there, even when I had what might have been a six-pack.
Well, as Milt Stegall used to tell me, he has a six-pack and I have the whole liquor store. So, you know, Ed, it's real intriguing and a great piece you did on BlueBombers.com concerning Sam Hurrell, because it captures everything I wanted to ask you about. What a story of redemption through three games so far.
Yeah, it's the Sam Hurrell thing maybe mirrors this team a little bit. You know, they've made an awful lot of change on defense. And so they need pieces like guys like Sam Hurrell to kind of keep this thing together early and let those new guys, especially on defense, kind of figure things out. I was talking to Matt Nichols yesterday. As much as this game coming up, we in the media can sell it as a chance to get some revenge from last November's playoff loss. I just think this team's kind of driven by, I don't know, they play with a chip on their shoulder. There's a whole bunch of guys on this team that have been cast adrift by other teams, and I think they almost take that to work every day and into every game. And so when we feed them those questions all this week about a chance to get some payback, a lot of them just seem to roll their eyes, and yeah, I guess the underlying message is that's the approach they seem to take every week.
I find it a real interesting storyline this week, where you don't know how long he's going to be able to play here with Jonathan Jennings down, but guys like Mike O'Shea, Richie Hall would be acutely aware of what Travis Lule is capable of, and yet you have essentially, I would assume, pretty much everyone, maybe everyone on the defense, not really knowing anything about him except for what they see on film from the game against Hamilton. But, boy, you got a real super capable guy coming in behind Jonathan Jennings and Travis Lule.
Yeah, it really is a hell of a story. We're talking about a guy that just 5 years ago was, you know, holding the Grey Cup up high and was the most outstanding player in the league, and then he's had all those injuries, the shoulder injuries and concerns about concussions and stuff. And I guess I'm like a lot of people that thought he was an interesting piece to have behind Jonathan Jennings just because of his experience, but I didn't think he had much left in the tank. And then last week he comes off the bench and does what he did against Hamilton. It's pretty impressive. So you're right, Troy. If this is the Travis Lule of 5-6 years ago, then the Bombers better be wary. And that's certainly the way he looked last week. But, you know, talking even to Jamal Westerman, who's been with this team for 2-3 years now, he's only faced Lule once, and he said yesterday that the defense went back and looked at film of him from 2013 because, you know, you talk to guys like Corey Johnson and even Drake Nevis, you know, their line, outside of, let's put it this way, outside of Chris Randall and Jamal Westerman, I'm not sure anybody on that D, maybe Ian Wild, would know who Travis Lule is. And so you got to get tuned up pretty quickly on this guy because as much as people will say there's a drop-off, there's a lot of similarities in their game, but the experience part with number 14 Lule behind center is pretty scary for anybody that would line up against him.
I was a little surprised to hear Mike O'Shea's comments concerning the playoff loss in BC last year. Obviously, he's not making the focus here all that, but he did admit that, you know, some of his team or most of his team is aware that of the situation, usually from a head coach who just says, you know, it's a new team, it's a new year, it's a new game. Were you surprised that Mike O'Shea says it is on the minds of some of his players?
Well, you know, that's a piece that I'm going to have posted later on today, too, about just whether this is a redemption game and all that. And you get different answers from guys. And, you know, I was just asking, do you still think about it? And when it's your last game of the year and it's a playoff game, of course you think about it all winter. And then this is the first meeting between the two clubs since last November. So when you go to break down film, again, you're reminded of it because you're watching what they did against you in your last game against them. So it's you know, just a natural byproduct of preparing for a game that is going to come up. I just think what they're trying to do is get the singular focus, the cliche, it's the big game because it's our next game thing. But I'm sure that's still stuck in the craw of some guys, and it's not so much that you get beat down in a playoff game, it's how they let that one slip away, and I think that's what sticks with guys, is that that was one they should have finished and they didn't. And people can fixate on the long field goal at the end of that game. But I know a lot of guys on defense are mad as hell as to how they let that one slip away by letting Jonathan Jennings, he went on an 11-for-11 run to finish that football game, and the Bombers couldn't stop him.
Just want to touch base on the closed practices. It's something that's gained a little bit of news here over the last couple of weeks. But I like listening to Mike O'Shea talk about it, how it sort of changes the mood of the team going out to practice. I remember the days going out there when it does change something for practice when it's just the guys are out there. It's kind of sucks ducks for the fans because you don't get the access to the same degree maybe, and the media not as knowledgeable of what's going on out there, but an important tool for teams to use.
Yeah, it's interesting, Troy, because you mention it, and I've never lived it, and I heard Mike O'Shea talk about just how the mood changes. I don't know what that means because, you know, it's not like you see a team that, you know, say Monday to Friday that's really tight out there. When we're able to watch practice, there's guys goofing around having fun. You see fights and all that stuff. I don't know how the mood would change. Maybe you could speak to that better than I can. But just in terms of preparation, obviously there's all kinds of things that you can benefit from practicing behind closed doors, and in terms of special plays you might want to do, different schemes, setups, all of those things that you might try to fine-tune without a bunch of watching eyes. And look, we all know that it's part of a coach's DNA to be a little bit paranoid about what the opposition is doing or what people might be able to glean from a practice. So, you know, Dave Dickinson brought it up this week in Calgary. It's been a factor, and Chris Jones shut down a practice in Saskatchewan, accusing Hamilton of spying, and of course Ken Dawson then says that's a bunch of crap. And I think we're just we have to get used to it here. It's the CFL does allow a team to close one practice a week, and I really think we're going to see more and more of it, as much as it does limit the access to fans who like to come out on a nice day and watch practice for a little while. It is part of the preparation and strategy. So, yeah, we're going to see more of it, and however they want to spin it, whether it's the lighter mood for players or whether you're trying to do special stuff or not, it's going to keep happening, I think, more and more, especially when you're playing a conference rival.
Ed Tate from BlueBombers.com joining us on the Big Show this morning, 13 minutes past the hour. Ed, what do you think the Bombers offense can get done, or what can they build off of last week going into BC against that Lions defense?
Yeah, well, the big talk lately has been about a better start. That would be massive, of course. I just like to see some more consistency. We saw last week how good, week one, they threw for four touchdown passes, could have had six, put up a ton of points against Saskatchewan. Week two had their opportunities against Calgary, let them slip away, and then they're kind of a little bit sputtered a little bit early last week against Toronto. But I like what the O-line did. I like kind of the return to the smash-mouth football with the running it. And they did enough to win last week. But now you'd like to see some consistency. You'd like to see a little bit of both, right? You'd like to see them be able to pound the ball along the ground, but I'd like to see them go a little bit more vertical. Got to get Darvin Adams more involved, Clarence Denmark. We all know what Weston Dressler has done, but you need to see some of these other pieces attack vertically more than they have been. And so we'll see if they can make that go. BC's defense is interesting. I look at it and I see a bunch of names that I'm not quite familiar with, guys that have kind of started to emerge last year, but there's some talent there. And so that's going to be an interesting challenge for Winnipeg, because can you pound the ball against them and can you attack vertically? That's what I'll be watching for tomorrow night.
Eddie, that smash-mouth football you talk about is something I love, and certainly the big fella that sits beside me during our game day stuff, and Chris Walby, absolutely loves it. And interestingly, just seeing here in the CFL stats that the Bombers, in their two wins this year, have rushing yards of 96 and 91 yards compared to their loss against Calgary with 48. And, of course, BC, number three in the CFL with 92 rushing yards per game, that have played a big role into them securing a 3-1 record. And interestingly, in the last 3 weeks, after a super slow start for rushing in the CFL, the team with more rushing yards is 9-2 during that time frame. Do you think maybe, even though it was such a strange and slow start for the run game in the CFL, that we get back to something a little bit closer to normal here going forward with some of that smash-mouth running game?
Yeah, I'd love to see that. I just think it's way more balanced in what teams do. And, you know, a lot of teams are copycatting other teams in this league, and it seemed like that Kent Austin approach from a couple of years ago that became real popular across the league, where instead of running on first down, you do these little swing passes or quick slants to get 4 or 5 yards on first down, and Hamilton all but abandons the run. And I think a lot of teams copied that, but now we're getting back to understanding that guys like Chris Walby and every old lineman that's ever put on a helmet loves to push the pile forward and not be dropping back into pass protection all the time. I think it's part of a team helping develop a team's personality, and it's no coincidence that this offense is feeling a whole lot better about themselves after what they did against Toronto, when you don't give up a sack and you pound the ball and Andrew Harris is grinding for every extra yard. That wears a defense down, and then I think all the things that come from that, the play action, the ability to stretch defenses downfield and not have them drop, you know, 8 and 9 guys into coverage all the time, really can impact how much more you can open up your playbook. So I'd like to see the Bombers do more, even more of it, and I think as that happens, that maybe we trend back towards having your tailback become a feature part of your offense again.
Should be a good one on Friday night, Ed. We appreciate your time and the insight. Enjoy the trip and the game on Friday.
Appreciate it, boys. Take care.
Thanks so much, Ed. Take care, pal.
Ed Tate of BlueBombers.com. I wanted to ask you guys about the closed practices. We'll do that before the Boss Pizza fan line opens as well. We got to take a break. We'll be back with more Big Show on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
leave the back gate unlocked because TSN's coming over on select evenings throughout the summer. TSN 1290 will be backing up the truck with a portable party for up to 25 people, including catering by Qdoba Mexican Eats. Beverages, including a sampling of Tallgrass Vodka from Winnipeg's only grain and bottle vodka produced by Capital K Distillery. Fireworks, courtesy of Archangel Fireworks, and iGrill 2 digital app connected thermometer for each grand prize winner provided by Lux Barbecue Company, and a hot tub for 1 week provided by our friends at Oasis Leisure Center. You also have the TSN 1290 crew on site to help serve and set up. Parties will happen Thursday evenings, including tonight. We're going to one lucky winner's place, and of course on August 10th. If you want to get in for the 10th, all you have to do is enter online at tsn1290.ca, and we could be seeing you very soon. Did we get a winner on our Super Spike passes?
We did. John Mosky.
John Mosky, you're going to Super Spike. We'll see you there this weekend, July 21st, 22nd, at Maple Grove Rugby Park. We also have two tickets for the 2017 Canada Games event, an official TSN 1290 Canada Summer Games pin. Today's tickets are for swimming, August 8th at the Pan Am Pool. August 8th at the Pan Am Pool, 12th caller through at 780-1290. We'll get a pair of tickets to the Canada Games that are coming up this end of this month. He's excited for the game. It's going to be a great event here in Winnipeg.
It will be real cool. Talk to the young fella about catching some of the action. It'll be real neat to see the impact that it has here for sure.
You know what I just heard as well? I have a buddy whose nephew is playing basketball for Team Manitoba. You know who's coming for Team Ontario? Mr. Barrett, who dropped 38 points against the Americans as a 16-year-old, then turned 17.
And he's playing in the Canada Games, huh?
And he's coming for Team Ontario.
You wonder what he will accomplish during this tournament.
Well, and I know some guys I played some senior hoops with here in town a couple of years ago that played for Team Manitoba, and they said they remember playing against Steve Nash when he was with Team BC. And didn't really – obviously one of the stars of Team BC, but, you know, probably 22, 28 points a game. And so this is some of the stuff the Canada Games do. So great event, as always. And 12th caller through will get you to a swimming event on August 8th at Pan Am Pool at 780-1290. Where was I going to go next here on the show, fellas? Just updating the open for sure here. Jordan Spieth now 5 under.
Yeah, going to be 6 under soon.
6 under soon. At 17, or is he on 18 now?
He's on 18. He's got a 5-footer for birdie.
Ian Poulter finished his round at 3 under. He's tied with Justin Thomas. Poulter is done, shot a 67. Thomas is on 17 at 3 under. And Brooks Koepka is on the 16th hole. He is 3 under as well. Hideki Matsuyama, Brandon and my pick this year, is 2 under through 16.
Austin Conley at even.
Even.
Tied for 24th. Kids hanging around.
Not bad.
That's great. Great stuff there. We are going to talk with Laura Armstrong about the Blue Jays coming up, but continuing with our open talk here, as I'm just looking at the leaderboard. I know that's probably annoying on the radio as I'm doing this for you, but Ernie Els is 2 under as well. Aaron Bradley is also 2 under, with lots of the big names yet to or about to tee off. Interesting that even 3 o'clock this afternoon is like when Mickelson is going off, and some of the other big names. Your cousin Lee Westwood tees off at looks like just before 2 o'clock Central Time.
That's what Huss was talking when he had his buddy on. I can't recall the name of the guy he talks to all the time about the sprinkles.
Feinbaum, I think.
Feinbaum, that's right. And they're talking about how impactful the AM-PM draw is specifically with the British Open when the weather can change so wildly from the draw, one draw to the next, and the impact that has on eventually winning a tournament if you get a little bit lucky with your draw. So things relatively benign this morning here across the pond, but supposed to get a little bit worse as the weekend goes along, and you wonder if maybe the wind, which it typically does, picks up a little bit in the afternoon.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting. And I think I heard today is supposed to be okay. I think it's tomorrow or Saturday where the winds and the weather are supposed to really play into this. So
that's what we love, right? When those winds get going there especially, that's when things get real ugly and beautiful at the same time.
There's the cardigan and the tie undone. I see what you're saying, Troy. If you're going to rock that look, rock it like it's
make it
8 a.m.
Make it sharp. Be sharp.
Yeah. Don't look like you just had three after work.
Justin Thomas doesn't eat two old men telling him how to swag on the golf course.
What did you just say? What did you just say? He does need it because that's the look I rocked for game days in junior high and high school, the cardigan and the tie, and it was done up. So if he's going to bring that look back, he's got to do it right. Although my cardigan had that white spadackle rice on it. Remember those jackets, the Corey Harts?
No, I don't. I do not.
Well, fortunate for you then. You were probably better dressed than I was back in the day. Jordan Spieth at 5-under leads the Open so far today. And, of course, you can catch that on TSN. And throughout the day today, Kevin O on the Don Vito Roundtable will keep you up to date, as will we with the afternoon ride. And then, of course, the Gondola Pizza warm-up, and then the afternoon ride with Rick Ralph.
I think you wanted to make a comment on the closed practices before, didn't you?
Yes, thank you. And just get your thoughts on that. Kevin O had a little rant on it on the Don Vito Roundtable yesterday. The closed practices on the CFL, we're going to open it on the Boston Pizza fan line as well.
What was his rant? What was his take?
He didn't like it at all. And he just made reference that I understand that, you know, packages and spine and all this do happen. But the CFL is a fan-friendly league. It's always been a fan-friendly league. And the idea that, you know, on any given day that somebody wants to put their kids in the car and go down and take in a practice, because you can't do it with the Jets and you can't do it with, you know, other things, that to close one of them, although it's only one, he didn't like it at all.
I think, well, yeah, and it is only one, for Pete's sake. So it is cool when, right, and it's not often, but once in a while people will go down there with their kids. Typically you have the same 4 to 10 people sort of thing that show up that are super, you know, blue and gold everywhere, and they show up to practice and that sort of thing. So they're missing out, I suppose. Not a whole pile of people typically taking practice, but for the one time a week, if you want to put in something that you're trying to, you know, keep away from public consumption, be it trick plays, special team stuff going on, whatever you're doing, fakes, then yeah, I see nothing wrong with this whatsoever. And I really think it's actually something that's been blown up a little bit more than I think it really should be. I have been at a couple practices where the coach will stop practice and throw somebody out of the stadium that they think is spy on them. Like, you'll have a game upcoming against Saskatchewan, and there's some yahoo sitting in row 20 decked out in green and white with binoculars and a pad and that sort of thing. And the chatter, and I've always thought it was pretty funny. Like, you could really mess with the heads. If you want to just have fun with Mike O'Shea, show up on the 2 days, you know, that they're, whoever they're playing against, come in those colors and see the attention that you draw when you're sitting there watching. It is pretty funny stuff. And Cal used to always think, Cal Murphy, we'd go into Toronto, into the Dome, and he was always real leery of there being some, especially when Don Matthews was in the league, wherever we were going and Don Matthews was there, he would be darn sure that somebody was spying on us from somewhere. So we'd be doing stuff to mislead those that were spying on us and all that sort of stuff. Paranoia. I don't know that there's a work environment where paranoia flourishes more than in CFL dressing rooms with coaches.
We'll get into more of this as we tee up the Boss Pizza fan line, but up next, Laura Armstrong on the Blue Jays on the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Speaking of the Canada Games, 1290 TSN, 1290 is proud to be a media sponsor. July 28th to August 13th, 16 sports, 250 events of the 50th anniversary of the Canada Summer Games. We'll welcome over 20,000 visitors, and tomorrow is your last day to help paint the town red, yellow, and orange. You can do it, of course, after tomorrow, but this Friday, July 21st, is your deadline to wear your official 2017 Canada Summer Games clothing. Take a picture of yourself and share the photo using the handle at 2017 Canada Games and the hashtag Gear Up for a chance to win a Via Rail promotional travel credit. So visit canadagames.ca/2017 for more information about Games Gear Fridays. Also, opening and closing ceremonies, tickets are available at ticketmaster.ca. Serena Ryder, Fred Pinner, Sierra Noble, Brett Kissel, just some of the performers at the opening and closing ceremonies. And, of course, you can also visit canadagames.ca/2017 for a full festival lineup at the Manitoba Liquor and Lottery's Canada Games Festival, which will be 11 days and over 150 artists and fireworks every night. 12th caller through once again, 780-1290. We'll get a pair of tickets to swimming at the Pan Am Pool on August 8th for the games. We're going to talk Toronto Blue Jays now, and we like to do that with Laura Armstrong. Laura, how are you today?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Good, thank you. Of course, Laura is with the Toronto Star covering the Blue Jays. And we were just talking about, well, for 2 weeks, 3 weeks now, what the Blue Jays do and how important this series is in Boston. They'll try to split the series today at noon Central Time against the Red Sox. But the flip side of that, and where I'll start with you, Laura, is who is the best team right now in that division? Is it the Boston Red Sox in your mind?
I don't know if it's the Boston Red Sox. You know, I think that it's an interesting time for the Boston Red Sox, having watched them this week, because they're coming off of a big weekend against the New York Yankees, and then they've had a couple of long games. So I don't think that we're seeing the best of the Boston Red Sox this week, which I think has really helped the Toronto Blue Jays. That being said, I think that the sleeper right now is the Tampa Bay Rays. They've been sort of coming along quietly, winning a bunch of their games. Their injured players are coming back. Their starting rotation has really solidified. And they're starting to creep up, at a time when, momentum is really important at the end, as we go into sort of this final stretch of the season. The Red Sox have struggled a little bit as of late. And I think that the Rays are really sort of coming into their own at a time that's important for the playoff time. So I think the Boston Red Sox, you know, I still think that they're great contenders, and not to say that, you know, they're not a great team. They've got a really hot offense. They've got Chris Sale, which is huge. But I do think that the Rays have quietly been going about their business and really coming on, and I think that the Boston Red Sox, at least here in Boston, I think that is something that people are starting to pay attention to, that maybe they're not going to run away with this division.
Laura, the epidemic of blisters in Major League Baseball right now is remarkable, with pitchers affecting a bunch of different teams, all kinds of man games lost due to them, and are just tragic how it's affected Aaron Sanchez's season this year. Please just touch on specifically how Sanchez has been affected, and then also how Major League Baseball appears to have a larger problem here.
Yeah, certainly. For Aaron Sanchez, and I think Aaron Sanchez is probably like the picture boy for blisters right now, which is certainly not a place that he wants to be. He has been dealing with this for on and off for 2 years. Last night was his first time this season that he's made three starts in a row. And the Blue Jays were really hopeful that showed that he was going to be back. He's not going to be dealing with these nagging issues. And then he comes out of the game after four innings with another small blister. And it's completely derailed his season. You know, John Gibbons said last night he hasn't had a year because of this niggling issue, that he's done everything that seems to be humanly possible. You know, they've been creative in trying to deal with this problem. And he's, you know, had procedures. He's cut the nail, slipped the nail from vertically to which was the radical sort of choice for the Blue Jays, and something that has worked for other pitchers before. But it's not working for him. It's interesting here. It's very hot outside. You wonder if sort of the humidity had something to play into it. I know that Aaron Sanchez, you know, was sweating last night, and you wonder if the moisture in the air had something to do with his finger. Marcus Stroman has come out. He had a small blister about a month ago, probably, maybe a little less. And he said that it was something about the balls. It was right before the All-Star break, and he said called on the league to look into it. The league commissioner has since said that, you know, that they're starting to take a look at this this issue. But they're in no way, you know, have any sort of decisive answer to why this is plaguing these pitchers. And I've you know, written sort of extensively about this issue. You know, it seems to be just a problem that nobody's really seemed to figure out. I don't necessarily know. Maybe, you know, as it becomes more more problematic for pitchers across the league. We'll see people paying more attention to it and trying to really figure out and get to sort of the nut of what the problem is. But it seems to be something that generally people think that you sort of have to just deal with along the way, which is not something that I think Aaron Sanchez is going to want to hear, but there's certainly not, at this point, any sort of solution.
John Gibbons a couple days ago, Laura, said that our record is reflective of how we've played. Where we're at is how we played. And I couldn't agree more, especially defensively. Nothing, I guess, as a fan of the Jays frustrates me more than the way they've played defensively. Can they put their thumb on that? Or even Josh Donaldson last night makes another error.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it comes down to, you know, the Blue Jays in terms of errors in the league, it's not like they're league leaders. You look at the error last night with Josh Donaldson, and then you look at another instance where Troy Tulowitzki sort of bobbled a ball, which ultimately it was an RBI for Dustin Pedroia, but he bobbled the ball, wasn't able to get it over to some smoke at first when he tried to barehand it. So I think that part of the problem is the errors. You know, the Blue Jays have been very solid defensively over the last couple of years. And you know, I don't know why those errors are happening. I don't know if it's a lapse of concentration or what the case is. I think that part of the problem for the Blue Jays is that they're a year older, they're a little bit slower getting to the ball, and there's a lot of sort of moments where maybe they're not necessarily errors like we saw with Tulowitzki last night, but they're sort of close errors or sort of lapses where they bobble balls, and that proves costly. It proved costly last night. And so I think that it's just they're a step behind where they were last year in terms of speed, and I think that that's making it harder to be clean defensively, which is something that I think has been underrated in the Blue Jays' sort of strengths over the past 2 years, is that they've never really had to think about sort of their fielding, and especially when their bats are hot, that's not what draws attention. But, you know, we've seen a lot of it this year, and why a guy like Josh Donaldson can, you know, make fantastic defensive plays. We saw a couple weeks ago against Houston, and then sort of err like he did last night. I don't know if the Blue Jays have pinpointed what it is about those moments that make those discrepancies.
Please talk to us a little bit about the situation and state of Danny Barnes with the team, and also how solid he's been during his ascent here.
Yeah, certainly. So Danny Barnes, I had a chat with him yesterday, actually, and he, you know, he didn't even expect to be on the roster at the beginning of the year. When he wasn't, it wasn't like it was a huge surprise. He knew he'd be competing for a spot, but he didn't necessarily expect to be there. He has options. He's a rookie. There's a recent story on Fangraphs, the analytics site, that said that he is one of the sort of sneakiest reliever candidates heading into the trade deadline. He's young. This is his rookie year. He's under control until 2022. He's cheap, and he's really come into his own in this past season. He has sort of been forced to come into his own just because the number of injuries that the relievers have had to the Blue Jays relievers have had so far this season. Yeah, he sort of keeps things simple. He has a really high pop-up rate, which has been crucial for him, one of the highest in baseball. And he keeps things simple, you know, fastball, changeup, and it's become quite effective. And I think that he's a very composed young man. He has been in the minors for quite a long time, and I think that that has helped him, you know, take the opportunity when he had it. He definitely came up last fall, made his major league debut in August, and was with the team for a considerable amount of time, but there was a lot more options in the pen last year. I think the problem that Danny Barnes runs into, and you know, he has said that he doesn't think he's a trade candidate, but the problem that he does run into potentially is the fact that the Blue Jays relievers have been doing very well this year. Relievers are hard to find on the trade market, so they could, you know, in a theory, maybe deal from their bullpen. And if they're dealing from their bullpen, Danny Barnes could be an attractive option based on how young he is, you know, again, his being under control and just how well he's played this year.
Laura Armstrong, a Blue Jays reporter from the Toronto Star, joining us on the Big Show this morning. TSN 1290, the Jays and the Red Sox go at it at noon today from Fenway, and then the Jays head to Cleveland. We'll have those games for you right here on TSN 1290. Laura, in your estimation, are the Jays actively looking to make moves? Are they listening to moves, or are they just status quo right now?
I think that the front office is doing some work. I think they've made it known that they'll listen to offers for pretty much anybody except for their really big players. I don't necessarily think that you're going to see a blockbuster Jays trade this summer, partially because I don't necessarily know that the Jays players are all that attractive on the market right now. I think that they're, you know, probably in discussion, as I said. I mean, they're in discussion for a second baseman, left fielder. Those are two areas, I think, especially second base with Devin Travis being out, that they want to improve on. So I think that, you know, more likely you're going to see some tweaks to this lineup, whether it be selling players or, you know, the likes of maybe Marco Estrada, Francisco Liriano, Joe Smith, these guys who are sort of up at the end of the year. Or bringing in maybe one, possibly two players who could bolster this lineup. But they're certainly not about to do anything that's going to hurt their team next year. So, you know, there's been talk about Jay Happ moving on, being traded. I don't necessarily think, you know, there was talk last week, Ken Rosenthal reported that that Jay Happ, there was interest from the Brewers, and that the Jays are not interested in selling him because he's part of their plan to compete in 2018. So I think that while, you know, the Blue Jays are still going to, you know, expect that this team continues to try and be competitive this season, you know, there's certainly one eye on next year, and I don't think that they're interested in weakening this team for next year. So you'll be looking for moves that maybe can, you know, maybe a rental that can make this team better for the latter half of the season, or a move from, you know, the team to like one of the players that is not going to hurt next year.
Great stuff as always, Laura. Thanks for doing this, and enjoy the rest of your week.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks so much, Laura.
At Laura Army on Twitter and as well on Toronto Star. Sorry, Laura. Oh, she's just saying bye. We'll take a break here on The Big Show, and when we come back, we'll tee up the Boston Pizza fan line here on TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 is proud to support the fifth and final HSC Foundation Celebrity Human Race. It's your chance to race around Winnipeg, competing in challenges and puzzles with your team's celebrities September 22nd and 23rd. The money raised allows the HSC Foundation to improve care for Manitoba families with research initiatives, cutting-edge medical equipment, state-of-the-art facilities. To learn more or to register, visit TSN1290.ca. Jim, Troy, and Brandon on The Big Show and teeing up the Boston Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Before we get to much else, we'll just ask, who do you have winning the British Open? Who do you have taking this year's The Open? Jordan Spieth finishes 18 under, tied for the lead with Brooks Koepka, who finishes, 18 under.
Yeah, finished, what are you, Nostradamus now?
5 under through 18. Is what I'm trying to say. Don't panic, everybody. Don't go holy. Brooks Koepka and Jordan Spieth share the lead. Both shot 65s to sit 5 under. Ian Poulter and Justin Thomas are done. They shot 67s, 2 off the pace, and they are 3 under. Matt Kuchar is currently on the 5th hole.
Cooch.
He's 3 under.
Interestingly, Spieth is the 6th player since 2000 to begin the Open bogey-free 65 or better. None of the previous 5, however, went on to hoist the mighty claret jug. I've got Sergio Garcia. I got John Rahm. Yeah, I've got a monopoly on Spain. And also, I've got Cousin Lee. Go catch this sucker, cuz.
Mr. Ruwicki.
Yeah, I had Matsuyama taking it in a solid opening round of 2 under 68. And Justin Rose as well, although I can't find his name anywhere near the top of the leaderboard. So that pick looks to be out the window right now. But I like Matsuyama's game. It's and Spieth, too. He only hit 5 fairways today. So I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing for the rest of the field.
I think that's pretty good when he can come out with a 5-under, huh?
Right.
I had Spieth winning along with Matsuyama. Well, Matsuyama, Spieth, and I had Justin Rose as well. He finished 1 over 71.
So. Those are real gutsy picks, man.
Yeah. I also had Tommy Fleetwood, who's currently 6 over par, out of my top 10 for guys who could win. Rose was the other one, and Adam Scott.
And hey, how about a big shout out to Austin Conley, man? Young fella that doesn't look like he's old enough to drive in his first open start. Comes out, birdies number 1, bogey 6, birdies 9. And then also, I believe he's
number 10.
Yeah, number 10. So the young fella is just clipping along here. Pretty doggone good. Tied for 14th right now.
Tied for 6th. He's moved up.
Sorry, tied for 6th.
2 under.
How awesome is that?
Who do you have winning the British Open? Or the Open, I should say. 780-1290. 780-1290. This is breaking news. Elliot Friedman has it. The St. Louis Blues and Colton Parenko have agreed on a 5-year deal at $5.5 million AAV for Colton Parenko and the St. Louis Blues on a 5-year deal. He was asking for 4.5 on a 1-year deal in arbitration.
That's an interesting deal. He's 24 years old, and why you're not going with 8, like with him specifically, is interesting, huh?
He probably didn't want to go for 8.
I guess unless you paid him well enough. But when you're talking about now coming, you know, expiring at 29, he'll be, I believe, when at the end of this contract, that's kind of it can be a bit of a touchy place, but likely to cash in again. But good for the St. Louis Blues, most certainly, that they can get something settled with what is a very dominant force out there.
Yeah, 5 years isn't what you want, but it's better than the 1 or the 2 years that was kind of being bandied about earlier, right? So, I mean, yeah, you'll take that if you're the Blues. And that, I mean, that's, you wonder kind of how, what their window is. And if it isn't, if it is the next 5 years and you get a, you know, at worst, a second-pairing defenseman for $5.5 million, that's a real juicy deal for the Blues.
So Slavin in Carolina at 23 gets just over 5, or just under 5.5. Parenko for 5 years gets 5.5, as we do in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada. What does this mean for Jacob Trouba?
That's
like, this has to help
man.
The Jets, eh? Yep, because yep. I would think Trouba would want 7 or 8 per. And when you see these deals and the comparables getting between 5 and 5.5, this has to help the Jets. Unless he doesn't sign.
And that's, yeah, this is my take on the Trouba situation. I think if he wanted to be here long term, that the Jets would have been able to finagle already a deal for it. And I don't think originally Jacob Trouba would have come out and said that he's playing this next year out to the end of the current contract. So I think Jacob Trouba, next time around here, they'll go to arbitration, they'll get whatever, but upon this, what is it, 7 years or 27, and I think his will be 7 years of service, right? And then he'll become a UFA. I just don't see him staying here past that point in time. That's the way I think it plays out.
I think that he plays this year, and when they have to do another bridge deal, I think this is when it comes to light. I think that's when they go, Jacob, we'd like to do the 7 or 8. We don't want to give you another 2. We'd like to have you here. Here's the price. And depending on this season, if it gets better than it already has been, it could be 6, 6.5. But when and if it's done, these kind of deals for Slavin and Parenko, I would think, have to help the Jets.
I think the Jets will end up trading Jacob Trouba before he becomes a UFA through the natural way, like the 7-year serve sort of thing.
So you think he gets another 2-year bridge deal after this season?
Yes.
They might have to, because those 2 years could very well be the Jets' best chances at contending for the Stanley Cup. And if you can't find either another Jacob Trouba or a left-handed Jacob Trouba, you can't make that deal. Because the next 3 years, you know, the Jets could very well contend after that. But we know with the whole ELC situation that your time is kind of limited when it comes to maybe really, truly being able to sneak under the cap and go for it at your best kind of maximum capacity.
Yeah. What do you think of Parenko's And five-year, $5.5 million deal, and of course, as it means to Jacob Trouba, who do you have in the open? What are your thoughts on CFL teams closing practice, even for one day per week? Do you like it? Do you not like it? Are you indifferent to that? And also, we started the show talking about CFL officiating and really just not trying to bash them more and more and more. Just try to figure out, what is your suggestion? How does it work? How do you fix the quality of officiating in the Canadian Football League? Anything else as well? Anything and everything on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290 on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
The iHeartRadio app is where you stream TSN 1290 and hundreds of other radio and digital stations. Check out the Perfect 4 menu to customize your listening experience. Your music, your station is always free on the iHeartRadio app. And this next segment of The Big Show on TSN 1290 is brought to you by Olympic Building Center. Jim Tolth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you in the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290 if you want to weigh in on the conversation. Who do you have winning the British Open? How do you fix, or what do you suggest to help the officiating level in the Canadian Football League? Colton Parenko, a new five-year, $27.5 million deal with the Blues, AAV of $5.5 million. Your thoughts on that, and potentially what it does with, of course, Mr. Jacob Trouba. O.J. Simpson could be paroled today. Do you care? Do you not care? The Jays, and of course, CFL having closed practices. What are your thoughts on that? Does it bother you? Does it not bother you? Or are you indifferent to the fact that if you wanted to go down and watch a practice one day a week, that a team can choose not to let you in to take it in?
All Jets practices are closed to the public unless they announce that it's open, right?
Yes.
Yes, I just to think that,
or at the Iceplex,
to think that Jets fans would be, or sorry, that Bomber fans would be offended or upset that one practice a week is going to be closed. To me, that's just ridiculous.
Yeah, and I think the CFL though is a different kind of league where you need as much fan involvement as possible. I don't think it's a major deal because it is. We're talking about how many closed practices a year, like 3 or 4, likely, unless you're Chris Jones, but. Yeah, I think the CFL, you have to try and get your fans involved with the teams, with the players, with the game as much as you can. And even if it might be a minute improvement, I think you take that. I think you jump at that opportunity every chance you can if you're the CFL. So if I'm the new commish, I try and work with the head coaches and make all of these practices available to the public because they need every little boost that they can get.
Yeah, I understand it. I get it. I don't think one practice a week matters, but then again, if you have one day off and you want to put your kids in the car and go down and take in a Canadian Football League practice, I would understand your frustration with it. Do we have head coach Paul Maurice's comments on it? Or Paul Maurice, sorry. Mike O'Shea's comments on closed practices and how they're dealing with it?
Just one sec on that.
Yeah, no, sorry. I'm just looking at what we have here. So I don't know, like Kevin Hrushevsky yesterday on the Don Vito Roundtable had a rant about it that he doesn't like it. It's supposed to be a fan-friendly league, and he understands the X's and O's, and if you have 6 or 7 new plays in a playbook to go in to face the BC Lions, you don't need them or anybody else, especially with iPhones and everything. But he said the chances of that or something coming up or somebody relaying that or I guess what are the chances of that? We have another spy gate going on in the Canadian Football League between Kent Hawson and Chris Jones.
Well, if there's any chance of it. But the fact of the matter, it's still everything still is open to the public. This is one day a week, for Pete's sake. All right, so if you got a home game, you got the day before, which is the best time to go see the players, I think. Now, you're not going to watch real practice, but I think the best time to go see the players and watch them have some fun and maybe, have a picture with them or something like that. It might be the day before. That's the loosest you see the guys in the day before home game where it's just all walkthrough and that sort of thing. But if you want to watch the practice and get to know as much as possible, you're telling me one day a week they have closed practice, that affects the fan base or anybody really in particular in a real negative way. I think that's just an outrageous argument.
Yeah, interesting. Like, chill out. What do you think? 780-1290 in the Boss Pizza fan line. Your thoughts on closed practices in the Canadian Football League. And also, you can text us at 1290-90 on the Big Show, and standard message rates applying if you want to get in on that. We started the show talking about last night's game, the kickoff week 5 in the Canadian Football League. The Ottawa Red Blacks hitting their first win of the year with a 24-19 win against the Montreal Alouettes. And the level of officiating in the game last night, again, I thought the Argos Bomber game, it wasn't about the what about Karen call. It was about the 12 or 13 and even the shot to the head at the end of the game that wasn't called on Ricky Ray. What can possibly be done with improving, helping these officials get better and developing more quality officials, I guess, is the answer?
Yeah, I'm not quite sure how you go about improving what the officials are doing right now, but there's no doubt whatsoever that it is an issue. I'd do my darndest to defend the officials and understand this in very difficult thing to do, regardless of the sport, really, or level that you're talking about. But watching that game last night, had the Red Blacks have lost that game with the pass interference in the end zone that was called, and then also the lateral play with Darren Durant that was blown dead, certainly would have ended up in most likely a touchdown for the Red Blacks. It would have been an atrocity had the Owls been able to convert late in the game and ultimately win it. The league has a problem right now. It's hurting not only the flow and all the rest of it, but you're actually affecting the integrity and outcome of games right now with some of the plays going on, and that affects winning and losing, which determines whether or not guys have jobs with the league, be it players or coaches. So it's an issue, and I don't know how you tackle it, but I would suspect that it's on a very short list of maybe the top three things that Randy Ambrosi has to get a grip of and do something to make a real positive impact on.
You know, that's an interesting point you bring up. I've heard that in other leagues as well as the CFL, that the outcomes of these games have jobs depending on them, mm-hmm. whether it's players, coaches, managers, whatever. And to have some things or a team's record be affected by the level of officiating, that's just, I think, unacceptable. To the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290, your thoughts on that and much more. Ron, welcome to the program. Go ahead.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Ron.
Okay, so I'm a long, long time CFL fan. Love the game. I would rather watch it than the NFL. I might watch the NFL in the playoffs and stuff like that. But I'm a huge, huge CFL fan. And with the level of officiating going on in the games, I'm seriously starting to get a little turned off by it. And I like, Jim, you asked, how do you fix it? Mr. Ambrosi has to, these guys need to be held accountable. All players are held accountable when they goof up I don't know how you can fix it, but it's really starting to affect the result of games in a bad way. And I love this game. I hope something can get done about it. But these referees need to be held accountable, and because I love this game so much that I want to see something happen, and something drastic needs to, like, referees need to, unless the league is telling them that these are the calls you have to make, maybe they're getting the screws put to them and saying, listen, you gotta make those calls, and I don't know. Something has to happen. Hopefully they can fix it soon, because I love the CFL, and I'm a huge Bomber fan, but I will watch every CFL game out there because that's how much I enjoy watching the CFL games. But I'm starting to get turned off a little bit because of the reffing.
Well, and that's what we're concerned with overall, but I agree, and I, Ron, I don't know how go about fixing it, because when I talk about officiating in other leagues have the money to spend or And I don't think just throwing money at a problem solves everything, but if you throw it at the right way, and I'm looking at not harping on these guys. I'm looking at trying to, is it more development? Is it more, you know, we talked about full-time job. I don't think the CFL can afford that at all. Like, I don't know how to sort of sit down with these guys at a grassroots level and help them perform better. I mean, I was at the Argos Bomber game, but I was at the one before that, the season opener against Calgary, and I saw an official on the sidelines, like, coaching and directing some of the officials on the field on positioning and everything else. Like, the work is there. It's not like they want to be poor, but it is affecting the league, and I guess it's a dangerous point when, like you mentioned, Troy, maybe 20 years ago, it was it Jake Ireland that we all loved, and although he maybe got the odd call wrong, we still, like, he was a solid official. You never talked about officials like you have been the past 5-6 years in the Canadian Football League.
No, yeah, it's something that seemed, you know, and it makes sense, right, when you have more angles and it's easier to break it down, social media contributing to the missed calls as well. But some of them, it's just strange. I don't know if it's just a real bad run here, if there's some other things coming into play, but as each game, each week goes by, they seem to be playing a larger role in some of the outcomes of the games, and that's you can't have that.
I share your concern, Ron, and most fans' concern concerning their love and passion for the Canadian Football League. Thanks for the call, Ron. Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Who's next?
We'll get Alan to hang on, but we'll go to Mike now.
Mike, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Good morning, guys.
Morning.
My opinion, it's not just the bad calls that could cost coaching staff or players future opportunities. But in a city like Winnipeg, in an 18-game schedule, it's not like Major League Baseball where you have 162 games. So if an umpire in baseball blew one game, it may not have that big of an impact. But with a smaller schedule, every game matters. And Winnipeg is such a finicky fan base that when the team is not doing well, the stands, you can look and see they're empty or they're not full. So it's also the revenue for the team or the profitability of the team or teams out there. And if I don't do my job well, I get reprimanded just like you would or anyone else would. And if things don't improve, you get released. I don't know why the league doesn't. If a referee makes one mistake in a 10-year career, that's one thing. But if he continues to make a mistake or bad calls, reprimand them. Kick them out of the league. Bring new guys up. But something needs to change because it's tough as a fan. Like another caller just said, you know, when the refs are making bad calls and it just changes the outcome of the game. So that's my thoughts.
I think it's foolish on our part to think that there's not some level of, like, to think that they're not held accountable, I think is a foolish notion on our part. We might not hear about it, and we obviously don't hear about it, but you can bet your boots they're being held accountable and that there's some level of reprimand in what they're doing. There's just no way in the world the league doesn't take care of itself in that manner.
Yeah, and I agree. And I applauded the league. I think there's a couple of horrible calls made by an official 2 years ago, and I just remember him getting suspended for a week. Like, he wasn't going to work games that week, and they were very positive about it, which I want to be too. Like, this is designed to improve the officiating in my mind, but they presented it. I believe Glenn Johnson was the guy who said it's not. We don't want him anymore. We want him to take a week off, evaluate, watch some games, realize the mistakes he made in the calls, and develop and grow that way. I don't know if he's still officiating or not. I think when you start getting rid of officials, I'm not opposed to that if there's a consistently poor job being done. But I think also it's you need these guys. Like, my concern is developing and getting them to be better.
Remember the home game, I can't remember who it was against, maybe Calgary, but it was super close late in the game. The receiver runs out for the Bombers to the line of scrimmage, checks with the ref, and it looks like everything was okay. And then I think that same ref called him offside or something like that. And then the league apologized later on. Yeah, those are the types of things. And I think there was an apology maybe already this year from the officials with something that went down as well, but it's just they need to get a grasp of it in a real hurry. That's for darn sure.
Thanks for the call, Mike. We appreciate it on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Alan, hang on, and we'll get to the rest of your calls as well on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. When we come back, this was a presentation, this segment was, of Olympic Building Center. Visit their design center today or online at olympicbuildingcenter.ca to start the project of your dreams today. More on the Fan Line when we come back to the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Our province is packed with shining stars in the world of sports. Every week, TSN 1290 would like to showcase and reward these individuals who are making a big impact and difference in what they do. Nominate a Manitoban athlete, coach, or volunteer who is dedicated to making their sport matter. Because every Friday on the Big Show, including tomorrow, we'll showcase a Subway Sports Star of the Week and reward him or her with a $50 Subway gift card. Visit TSN1290.ca to nominate your sports star, and we could be featuring them soon. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki with you on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290, or text us at 1290-90 with standard message rates applying. David, you're on the Big Show. Go ahead. Or sorry, Alan. Alan, you're up first on the Big Show. Go ahead.
Top of the morning to you, boys.
And to you.
Talking about the refs, it's been a problem for quite a few years now, and I really don't know what the answer is because I don't think they get paid enough, for starters, and I don't know, you know.
Do any of us know how much they get paid?
I've Googled it, and it's not a lot, I'll tell you that. Like, there's an average out there. Some get paid more than others, which is probably another issue. But I just think it's a problem that's really going to be tough to figure out for the league. I just think it is. We've known this for years. We've talked about it for years. So I really don't know what the answer is there. But my next question is, this thing with people, like, sports athletes, professionals making these amazing amounts of money. Is that ever going to stop? Like, there has to be a time when you can't pay these guys anymore because fans can't afford to go to these games. These guys are making so much money.
I agree, man. At some point in time, the economic model of the way things are set up, you would think there'll be a big-time bite back. And, hey, we already might be witnessing that to some degree in a sort of a slow... slow change to the landscape. When you look at, for instance, south of the border, how ESPN is changing, and there's all kinds of cutbacks and layoffs and stuff like that. You have other entities that maybe have overpaid for certain rights. You look at the recent negotiation of the NHL rights and the bleeding that took place financially from that. So it might be changing, but I think it's a great question to ask.
I think they can afford to go, and they are going. That's why the athletes are getting paid that much. I just think it's not all fans can afford to go. But that's what a salary cap does, and I don't know. I mean, it's not like there's not the money there that they're getting paid. It's they're getting paid because teams are making money.
It just sucks for the lower middle class people,
it does. Yeah,
right?
It
because
does.
They're the ones getting squeezed out of watching the games because they can't afford the tickets. But the fact remains, you know, go to the NFL, they're selling out. Like they're not really worried about anything right now. Maybe that changes in the future, but unfortunately, you know, owners aren't going to change the way they operate until the seats start to get empty. Mm-hmm. And if that keeps going on, the salaries are just going to keep going up and up.
And seeing, looked at Google about CFL refs, and from something I can see here, if a referee officiates 18 games during the regular season, he will earn just over $15,000 over 4 months.
I got that too, but that was from 2009, the one I got. Is that the same? What year is yours? Like, that's over 10 years ago, so I don't want to throw that. I don't know if it's more or not, but it's not enough. Like, it's you can't make
this
a living.
This is something from April 26th of 2017.
Okay.
But I don't know if those numbers are accurate or.
Even if
sure
it's 20,000,
right?
That's.
It's nothing for the time you have to put in. And I know your expenses are paid, but your travel, the effort, the time to put in.
Well, you'd think that their travel, I don't know if there's a union or anything like that, but.
Well, no, it's covered, but I'm talking about your time. Like,
well, your time is what you get paid for, isn't it? Time to be a ref and all the rest of it?
Yes, but.
And they all have full-time jobs or jobs as well.
Well, that's what I mean. Right? Like this guy that I'm reading about, Steen from Edmonton, he's a lawyer. So for him to do a game on a Thursday, I doubt if he's practicing Thursday, going into the office, so that's mm-hmm. costing him money. Now, he is getting paid for the game, but if he's got to go down to Calgary or out to BC to do a game, that's probably two more days if it's not a weekend game that he's not practicing law. Like, that's what I mean about the expense of the expenses are covered.
This is also a debate in the NFL, you know? Like, they're not full-time refs either. And so you think of the NFL, they're not full-time refs. There's not enough. Is money the issue there?
No. And that's why I'm literally, I can't figure out how to fix the CFL one, because in the NFL, you can make it full-time if you're that concerned about it, and you can afford it.
I tell you what, man, I think you can go a long way into fixing a lot of the problems if you have a direct line into the ear of the head ref with command center that has access to the instant replays immediately. You could save a lot of embarrassment and time by that quick conversation constantly happening live in the ear of the head ref. I don't understand why it's not utilized. That lateral play, for instance, although that was blown dead, even in that situation, you would think as a head ref to not blow it dead, let it play out, and then have a review or huddle with the refs, right, to discuss it if there's any sort of question mark. And I don't know how, as an official in that situation, you can't be a little up in the air, dicey on the initial decision to blow the play dead like that.
We'll take a break. We got David on the line. We'll get to more of your calls when we come back on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 is proud to present MTS Super Spike this weekend, July 21st and 22nd at Maple Grove Rugby Park. Headliners on the concert stage this year include the Sam Roberts Band, the Lytics, the Treble, and more. Weekend passes for all shows are on sale now at superspike.ca, or keep listening to The Big Show this week for your chance to win tickets. All proceeds from this year's event go to Volleyball Manitoba, Kidsport Manitoba, and the True North Youth Foundation. Jim, Troy, and Brandon on The Big Show, TSN 1290, and the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290.
Just looking at something now that's from the CFL and up to date, and it says that current compensation for on-field officials is not public. Compensation benefits, work conditions are negotiated by the Canadian Professional Football Officials Association, and their first uniform contract was established in 2005 after the association was formed in 1996. Their latest contract was signed on the eve of the 2015 season. No details of current compensation rates are known, stating 10-year-old figures is accurate today would be wrong, which is what we just did a little while ago.
Well, yeah. And I think it's fair to say whatever it is, it's probably not enough. Like, it's not, I mean, they're not
Well, you
making
can, you can, that's a blanket statement right across the CFL, right? But it's all about supply and demand, man. So it's, you say it's not enough, but it's what the market offers them.
Continuing the conversation on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. And, of course, you can text us as well at 129090. Standard message rates apply when you text. So whatever you usually cost you to send a text, if you have unlimited, it's unlimited. And if you don't, it's going to cost you. But by all means, feel free to weigh in on the conversation as well. Back to the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 2780-1290. David, you're on the program. Thanks for waiting.
Good morning, guys.
Morning.
Troy, with the direct line from the command center into the ref's earpiece, wouldn't you be worried about command center dictating how a game gets played out versus allowing the refs to sit there and make their own decisions instead of having somebody like the big boss overlooking them and telling them how to do it?
Well, I would think there'd be a fair level of constant communication at hand with that, right? So that you'd have someone at command center, maybe in a senior type position, but discussing things with the head ref, and sort of having two minds is better than one sort of thing at work, no?
Yeah, that's true. Like, for example, a couple seasons ago, there was one game for the Bombers where there was a blatant pass interference call that was missed before pass interference was challengeable. And the following week, the Bombers had a game, and I believe it was Greg Carr, where he legitimately grabbed onto the other player like he was being held up. And the ref threw the flag, which from my perspective as a fan, I could see that being a mulligan from the CFL because of the blatant missed call the week prior. But I know when it comes to
something like that. I would rather have the refs have more control of the game than allowing command center to say, oh, no, like, this is what should have happened, and letting, like you said, let them be able to make their own decisions and just giving the input instead of overlooking everything.
I just think it's a wonderful tool. You have basically an eye in the sky to help you with just, I think it would increase the flow of the game, help keep things more bang on as to exactly what's happening on the field. The technology's there. I don't know why you wouldn't utilize it. I don't think it would slow down the game at all. I think it would only help everyone involved.
Yeah, I disagree. I think that I agree with the caller. I think that the calls have to be made on the field. And if there's one correction to be made, I have no problem with the potential of it coming in from a command center. But in order to do that, it is going to take some time. It's not going to be just seamless like when on the field a play is called. Something to come in from somewhere else in a guy's ear on the field, he's going to have to listen to it. And is there going to be a back and forth between that? Is he going to have seen something that the command center didn't, if the command center is trying to
talk
correct
about
him
it, and, though, man?
But yeah, but to talk about it takes time. It's not going to be seamless.
I think it'd be pretty seamless, man.
How, though, Troy? Like, let's take that Ricky Ray hit to the head.
Okay, let's talk it out. You be whichever side you think makes your point better, command center or the official.
The official. So the official's on the field.
Calls nothing.
It's intercepted. The play's dead. He's watching the play. Doesn't see the hit to the head.
Okay, and I say, hey, man, you got a hit to the head of the quarterback by Poop Johnson.
Yeah, and so he just throws the flag?
Yep.
He just does whatever the guy in the
or
the ear
or
tells
you
him.
Say are you absolutely positive? And they would have this worked out previous, right? Confirmed. You say something along the lines from command center. Confirmed hit to the head. Poop Johnson on Ricky Ray.
So then the guy in the field isn't making a call at all. He's just doing what the guy in his ear tells him.
If it was missed, yeah, he's doing what he told him. If they have a word to say something along the lines of confirmed, which means there's no doubt whatsoever. Yep.
I don't see how that happens in human nature. I don't see how the play is intercepted, TJ Heath goes down, and you get in your ear, you've got a hit to the head from 67, which I presume the command center may or may not have seen in real time. If they did see in real time, has to get a number to make sure it's the right guy, because even we thought watching on TV it was a different player than Poop Johnson.
Well, I didn't think it was. I made a mistake as to who it was, but yes, so you secure the number quickly.
And I mean, that's just one play on the field that he doesn't know what's going to happen to the quarterback. So the command center has to be watching everything just like the official is. And I don't know how, although we see it on replays, like how is a guy watching it on TV live going to see that penalty compared to what we see on a replay?
Well,
we didn't see it live.
They'll have access to all the TV feeds, I would assume, and it doesn't need to just be one person, right? You're televising one game at a time, so you can have 5-6 sets of eyes on a number of different camera angles, I would assume, at command center.
That costs more money because now you have more people working the command center.
Well, we don't know how command center is set up, first of all, and secondly, of course, there's going to be if there's money attached to maintaining the integrity of your league, then it's money well spent.
I do agree with the caller. I think that because we're talking about a play that we know happened, but if say five guys are watching different camera angles on the command center, now you have five guys speaking to this guy in case there's an infraction.
It doesn't matter if something happened on the field that was missed. It's going to be real easy to identify that. If I say confirmed, we have this happening here or that happening there, whatever it is. And 99% of the time, guys, the refs get the call right or the flag does drop. And I would say that you don't need to maybe come in over the top. Even if the flag, if it's incorrect, right, you leave it up to the challenge to make maybe right incorrect. But it's things that are blatant and missed, I think it does wonders for the game.
It's going to take time. It's not going to be seamless. In order to have a or even to have a guy in your ear telling you what to call is going to take time.
Would you rather have the game be 10, 15 minutes longer and they get the calls right, or what we have this season? Is what it really boils down to, I think.
Well, and that's what we brought up about the last game as well. Like on that play, so fans in the stands are sitting there and they see the interception and they're happy. But then they right away look at the field for flags. So there's that pause from fans that go, is that a clean play? Is it over? Do we get the ball? and then you got to wait to see if an official is going to get somebody in his ear to call something. Then you got to wait again. Like, as a fan, I don't think fans want to sit there and have 3 moments of anticipation to see if a play's dead or not.
I think ultimately the fans want the right thing to happen on the field. And if there's a change, if a flag is dropped with some level of delay, and then through video, it can be, if you need to explain it to the fans as they do on certain changes, they can do that. The ref can turn on his mic, say we have an infraction, blah, 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 on Poop Johnson, on Ricky Ray. They can show it on the big screen. They certainly show it at home on the broadcast. And what happens on the field is right, and everything moves forward with everything as it happened. That helps forge the integrity of the play call or the officiating.
Appreciate the call, David. We'll get back to you and the Boston Pizza fan line. What do you think on the whole process and the thoughts of the overall officiating as well? Boston Pizza fan line, 780-1290. And don't forget, you can text 1290-90 with standard message rates applying. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki in the Boston Pizza fan line. Bob, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Jimmy.
Cosmic.
How are you, buddy?
I'm well. How are you?
Good.
Are you grooving? Are you feeling good? Are you feeling well?
Lazy, hazy days of summer, baby. Yeah.
Get some sun on your face?
Vitamin D, baby.
You need that, don't you?
I do need a lot of it.
Ooh-wee.
Yeah, just 3 quick questions, you guys. I was noticing Troy was saying complimentary about one of the Jets' latest signings. He's got a certain grit. And, of course, Troy was using that complimentarily. Does that mean one can assume, you know, on a fan level, that it actually helps in hockey to have a combative persona?
I think in any sport that I am aware of, having a combative but disciplined persona is a positive.
Excellent.
But if you are combative without discipline, you are destined for disaster. You have to have discipline.
Because there's actually, you know, Troy, a fine line between that wondrous combativeness and contempt.
Absolutely, yeah. And maybe is discipline that fine line?
It is. Absolutely. A very fine line. Mm-hmm. And my second question is, I was listening to Jim Rome, and he was breathing a sigh of relief as he was mentioning, oh, my God, thank God, all hockey players don't respond in this cliche way with a kind of a relief in his voice. And this was after, I think, he'd interviewed Sid, who I thought was a pretty good interview. Is that generally more so in the NHL, this on-air cliche persona?
Polished? Yeah, like people, some media don't like it, right? Especially a guy who can be a clown or was a clown, in my opinion, Jim Rohn, sitting across from Chris Everett, right, the quarterback for the Rams, but he kept calling him Chrissy, and like that's how he got his big break. Uh-huh. So a guy like Jim Rome would love a little bit more of a juicy response and all the rest of it. Hockey guys, I don't know, we all love sports, we all listen to sports interviews. Is there a larger group of athletes that belong to a league that are more polished in dealing with the media and better trained than what the NHL players are? I dare say that there's not.
So they do have a certain procedure they probably use on air.
You do wonder, though, Bobby, is the NHL missing out on marketing its players to a better level in not allowing their personalities or, you know, somehow mandating and almost from a league-wide stance organizationally to allow their players to be a little bit more personal? Although some are, like guys like Brent Burns certainly are, right? And PK Subban most certainly is. But by and large, very benign type responses to media.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe that'd fill that portion of the arena down south you were saying.
I tell you who loves those types of answers, though, Bobby, are all of the organizations involved. All organizations want their athletes to basically only respond in a manner in what you have to say and, you know, keep it to a minimum and just perform at a high level. That's all they want you to do.
I think they need to... maybe celebrate who the players are, because like Sidney Crosby seems like a guy who just doesn't have an outgoing personality. But why not market to that? You know what I mean? Kind of similar to what Jonathan Toews and Captain Sirius was able to get a little bit
of. But yet behind closed doors in the locker room, you'd have to think he does, like, the personality would blossom, right? There's no way he's as held back behind closed doors when he was joking around with Fleury or any of his buddies, right? Like, there's all kinds of way more personality there than he ever exposes. But it's also important for him to protect himself, probably,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, he's in a different state than 99% of athletes. But, I mean, the NHL doesn't – the NHL's always been about team, right? It's always team first. Any sort of individuality is seen as almost selfish in a way. When, I mean, maybe Brent Burns and PK Subban are kind of shifting it a little bit, but we're still seeing a lot of pushback when it comes, when we hear from fans even, right, about how those guys kind of present themselves sometimes.
And I think the list is longer. Like, you can include Yager, and there's a few other names you could add to that list, right?
I don't find it, when it comes to personality, buttoned down in the National Hockey League. I find it when you're talking about your opponent. It's cliche. It's this, it's that, it's mundane, you know, all that stuff. But I think there's lots of personalities in the National Hockey League. We don't find Nick Ehlers entertaining when he says some of the things he says, or Patrick Laine this year.
Well, Laine, but he also got in trouble for it. Sat down, in fact, from the first, got taken off the first team power play for being very direct and entertaining.
Do we know that for a fact? That's why he was taken
off. You're damn right we do.
How do we know that?
Well, let's go back to the tape. We discussed it at length. He scores two goals in the Dallas Star game on the power play, comes out and said, well, the reason I'm here, or one of the things I'm going to do, the Jets had the worst power play in the league last year. I'm going to add to it. That's paraphrasing, of course, and make it much better than that. And then he's on the second team power play the next game. Kidding me?
Dustin Byfuglien has personality. Like, look at the Jets alone and some of the guys who – I understand. Hey, we get enough cliches in this business. But I do think that it's not as buttoned down as everybody thinks. I think that, like, Malkin is a prime example, too. Crosby is who he is because I think that's his personality. Malkin's on Twitter and Instagram and all these things and saying and doing things. Putting a little color in the league, as you will, Bob, on your face with some vitamin D. Good luck with that. Thanks for the call. Barry, you're on the big show. Go ahead, Barry.
Yeah. Good morning, guys. How you doing?
Good, thanks. Got a quick segment here. Sorry, we're almost out of time, but go ahead.
Yeah, I know. That's always all the time when I get on, but this is the way it goes, buddy. Let me just tell you this. First off, how would you like to be working a job where you got somebody always looking over your shoulder, always on top of you? You're scared to make a call because you're going to be questioned on it. This technology has ruined sports, and it's ruined football, man. I used to love talking to Buddy at the end of the game and say, boy, you know what? My team should have beat your team, but what a bad call. Oh, yeah, well, you know what I mean?
No,
I can't even watch a game anymore because there's so many. They're bringing up the tablets. Oh, well, oh, look at the guy touched his toe. There's got to be a penalty. This has gone to the point that it's ridiculous. These linesmen, these referees, they can't make a call because even if they think they're right, they're wrong.
You know, Barry, wonder. The one thing.
Stop, man. It's ludicrous. This is a sport. It's a game. We're not going to the moon again and the Mars, man. This is a game. We're out to have some fun. So we're going to get a bad call every once in a while. Let it go. Let it go.
You can't let it. When you're talking NFL, and Barry, I think you've talked about sprinkling a little bit the way that Huss does. That's when the integrity is that much more important from the fan side of it. But I wonder if maybe, like, and we. You know, it's being portrayed a little bit as negative, having Big Brother over your shoulder for a head ref if he's talking to the command center. Why can't it be a joint effort, a partnership more so? Like, maybe it's time to take into consideration changing almost the hierarchy of officiating on game day. Like, maybe the head ref in whatever, like, why not have it more of a partnership with command center, the eye in the sky? You know, the eye in the sky these days for officiating crew. The help that it could provide in making sure that you get things right is remarkable, the impact it could make. So why not, instead of the head ref and then you have the big brother over the shoulder, why not consider it more of a partnership in just helping to maintain all of the true integrity and the rights and the wrongs that happen during the course of the game? I think it's a wonderful tool. Use it.
We got to take a break. Thanks for the call, Barry. We'll get to Colin and whoever else is next on the Boss Pizza Fan Line when we come back to the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back to the Boss Pizza Fan Line on the Big Show, TSN 1290. Colin, you're on the program. Thanks for waiting. Go ahead.
Hey, I like what Troy is saying about using the eye in the sky, but instead of having him tell an official on the field when to throw a flag, why not give him the ability to throw a flag with, like, LED lights set up through the stadium? He pushes a button, they turn red or orange or whatever it is, and there's a flag on the play, and then he can talk to the ref once the play is called dead.
I hate taking the human element out of it. I honestly do, and I think it's I still think it's going to take time. And the other problem is cash. Like, how much money does it cost to do this? We're talking about the Canadian Football League.
That whole human element thing was an argument when technology was first being introduced to sport at the degree that it was maybe 5-10 years ago. But at this point in time, that is, we are so far past the old school, I like the human element part of it, where it's just with all the camera angles, all the immediacy of seeing if things are right or wrong, that's out the window, man.
Well, we got a tweet from Frank. FIFA is experimenting with video assistant refs this summer. Not perfect, but it has been working, and I was aware of that. But if FIFA is an entity that can rain money down on whatever they want to do to help improve the game.
Yeah,
the NFL is another one.
Yeah, and hey, I know, like, we're not talking about, you know, FIFA's spiffy stuff with the goal line and all the computer generated stuff as well, but there's most certainly things that the CFL can do here. I think whatever it costs to further protect the integrity of your game, the teams, the league and the teams involved can pony up for that. You would think it's in everyone's best interest. You can't allow the slippery slope of the fans questioning things 3-4 times during the course of a game, refs getting things wrong, outcomes being altered and changed, varied because of what the officials are doing. You've got to protect your officials. There's too much technology that shows what's when they blow calls and they get ripped apart. So you're going to go a long way in protecting the officials in helping to utilize technology to the fullest.
We appreciate all the calls, tweets, and texts. We got to go. We'll be back tomorrow to set up a Minook Denture Blue Bomber game day, as we will have 2 hours of coverage starting at 7 p.m. tomorrow night. And then kickoff on TSN is at 9 p.m. But we'll tee it all up for you tomorrow morning starting at 6 here on the Big Show as the Bombers head to BC today and take on the Lions tomorrow night. On behalf of Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki, and myself, Jim Toth, we appreciate you listening. And we'll be back on the Big Show at 6 a.m. tomorrow on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.